ladies and gentlemen. The story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The Beast, the Man.
You gotta beat the Man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki? Is it? It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Also, our friends over at Click Wrestle, Wrestling on Demand. The phone number is sponsored by Underground Radio, and it's 877-588-9877. Option one is the way to join us on the show here tonight. As mentioned, I am Alan Wojcik, the host of Online World of Wrestling Radio. In a moment or two, we will be joined by two gentlemen who not only are a part of the network on Sunday nights, Wrestle Talk Radio program, but they also have a really cool show on Wednesday nights here called Utaku Talk Live, and we'll mention their endeavors in a little while. Music tonight is brought to you by one of my favorite bands out of Seattle, who unfortunately ended way too soon. It'll be Jerry Cantrell on guitar, Mike Starr as the bassist. And if you saw the most recent edition of Dr. Drew's Soberhouse, you saw Mike Starr, unfortunately, battle a serious heroin addiction. The drummer for the band for the most of the time was Sean Kinney, and the man with one of the most amazing rock voices ever is the late Lane Staley. He died in April of 2002. Now, since he passed away, Alice in Chains has still gone on with the new lead singer, and unfortunately without Mike Starr, who, as I mentioned, has been fighting heroin addiction. Before we started the show, you heard Check My Brain, which is off one of their most recent albums, that I believe came out last year, and it's a little awkward to listen to that band without Lane doing the vocals. So let's get to the program. Tonight at 10 p.m., we will be joined by, once again, the former member of the Rock and Raven section, the Embassy, and a bunch of other endeavors. Jimmy Rave will be here tonight. After him, around 10:30-ish, if you're a fan of the YRR gimmick from FIP, and it kind of was in Ring of Honor for a while, you've been in some of the Jeff Peterson Memorial Cups, you've gone to NWA Anarchy, Wildside, or Rampage for Wrestling, you'll know the name of Sal Rinaro. He is also the commissioner of Rampage for Wrestling. He will be joining us to stop by and talk about their big event this Saturday at Johnny G's Fun Center, Ducktoberfest. It's called. It's main evented with a steel cage match featuring the new exotic ones taking on the usual suspects. And around 11-ish, We will be doing something that I personally have never done in an interview, be it on radio, be it in a print interview, the internet, anywhere. We're going to talk to a gentleman who currently is a junior heavyweight star, event in the Tennessee area, and also works for Rampage Pro Wrestling and other southeast areas. But if you watch TNA Wrestling or WWE, the name Mike Posey may mean something to you because you saw him in the really cool striped shirts. He refereed for TNA, he refereed for WWE during ECW version, whichever one it was that you want to pick. So we'll be talking to all those gentlemen, and we'll get into a whole bunch of stuff, including this past Sunday's very interesting bragging rights event, which actually kind of got a kickoff on this past Saturday night. And it kind of ties into some of the stuff you saw during the pay-per-view. And this is where we welcome the Spud Guy and Mace, who graciously joined us again this evening to give their insights. Both are trained professional wrestlers. Spud does have a background in the mix of martial arts and was the main reason that I checked out this past Saturday's UFC 121, I think was the number they're up to on that, Spud. Was it 121 we watched? He's there somewhere. It's one of those microphone issues. It's an interesting organization because they actually will do, and Mace and I have talked about this a couple times, that if you watch Spike TV besides the Ultimate Fighter event, I believe they were in England recently and did a live free UFC for the fans.
They're going to be doing another one.
I think they mentioned I think Rogan and the other gentleman mentioned, yeah, Germany, of all places. Like, yeah, we're going to Germany, dude. We're huge in Belgium, man.
It's in Germany. And by the way, Alan,
yes,
a couple of years ago, Alice in Chains co-headlined Rock on the Range in Columbus.
Oh, really?
About an hour and a half south of me, and I went, and I saw the new lead singer. And first of all, I was shocked when he came out on stage and he was black. Not because he was black, but because when he opened the last song that they played was Man in the Box. And for any Alice in Chains fan, that is the litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out and they did Man in the Box, and he belted that song and hit every note, and as if Elaine Staley was up on stage singing that song.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've been meaning to see them.
He's good. He's really good.
Yeah, it's just one of those that there's certain bands, like, if you're a fan of the 80s bands like In Excess, it's a little awkward to listen to someone like Michael Hutchins, who had a great voice, and then you see what they did with that band. But back to this past Saturday night, if you saw a lot of stuff online, you saw a crazy load of stuff, if you went watched the Bragging Rights show, you heard the news that Mark Calloway and Mrs. Calloway, along with Paul Heyman and Rowdy Roddy Piper, were in California at Anaheim to watch the Cain Velasquez Brock Lesnar event. And witness Brock Lesnar get knocked on his butt. However, I think, was it Mace? You had said actually Brock knocked himself out?
He didn't quite knock himself out, but he tumbled over his own feet with legs to him getting his head turned into seven shades of red.
Yeah, then possibly a broken cheekbone and other fun events. If you went to MMAfighting.com or the OWW Genesis board where there's a video of this, a gentleman named Ariel Helwani actually interviewed The Undertaker, and at one point Lesnar walks right by him and he literally turns to him and says the following, "You want to do it?" Now they had a brief stare down, which apparently all of this happened post-show, everything. And Brock actually kept walking and not responded to Undertaker's challenge. And during the interview, he's asked what went down there. And Taker just says, oh, it's personal, and he kind of keeps rambling. Now, later in the evening, Dana White was responded to the confrontation in the dressing room that WWE is pushing hard to have Brock face the Undertaker in some capacity, be it MMA, be it a straight-up wrestling match at WrestleMania 27. At the time, Dana White denied knowing anything about it. Now, according to reliable sources that were in Anaheim, WWE has already contacted Brock about wrestling at WrestleMania, but his current deal does not allow him to compete. TMZ.com, which has a sports area too, so watch out all you athletes, approached Dana White, and he said the following. He is not going to wrestle in the WWE. He cannot wrestle, box, or fight anywhere else. This basically is because Lesnar has a lock-solid contract with UFC. Now, it's a little weird that the night before you're in Anaheim, and then the next night you're in Minneapolis. I'm not privy to, obviously he's a veteran of veterans. He's the most tenured gentleman on the roster. But did it bother either one of you before we watched that pay-per-view event to go, okay, we see how focused you are on your pay-per-view match. You're in Anaheim, California watching Ultimate Fight. Does that bother anybody that we later found out he has a shoulder injury, that he went into this match with a shoulder injury. Either one of you, does it faze you at all that Taker opted to, instead of going to Minneapolis ahead of time, he just like flew in that day?
I don't think it really matters what Undertaker did. I think he's proven that no matter what he does the night before, he's going to show up the next night for a pay-per-view and put on a match, you know, a match worthy of being there. So I particularly don't care that he was there at all.
Mm. Did you, all right, we talked about this Sunday night, and then you and I actually talked about it a little bit, and we've talked about it since then before Dana White came out and said, no, this can't happen, no way whatsoever. And it seemed like the group agreed, and it seemed like the fans in OWW's Genesis on the Online World of Wrestling Radio felt that this was just like a test balloon to see how the audience would react. Either one of you think that Dana will change his mind and let Lesnar free? And money makes the world go round. 20 mil went to Money Mayweather a couple WrestleManias ago. What's a dollar figure if you're Dana White to let Brock free for a couple shots and do Mania? I mean, you mentioned to me personally when we were watching the show, Spug, that if you look at the you said it yourself, if you look at the heavyweight roster, the UFC, what's honestly there? Can you help enlighten the audience, please?
Well, you have Brock and you have Kane. Those are your top two. You go down the card, you've got Frank Mir. You've got Shane Carwin, who's recuperating after the beatdown that Brock gave him. You've got Nogueira. You've got quite a few, but the problem with the UFC heavyweight division is that for years it's been decimated and ignored, and they're just now starting to build it back up, so it's in a very precarious position. If I'm Dana White, no amount of money is letting me let one of my top heavyweights out.
Well, how far in advance? Before we go to Mace for a second, let me ask a follow-up here. We know how far in advance WWE and TNA events are booked. How far in advance is a UFC event, to your knowledge, booked? Is it they already know UFC 125 before they debut 121 on a pay-per-view event? How far out are they booked?
I would say, in my experience with it and knowledge of it, the main event and co-main events are usually booked at least 3 months in advance.
Okay.
And then from there, they sort of fill in the undercard.
Okay. To Mace, give me a dollar amount. Do you agree with what Spug said? No amount of money is enough for Dana to go, yeah, go ahead, Brock, have fun with your former employee, or what do you think?
Yeah, well, given the insight that's happened in the past 24 hours, I'm going to agree with Spug. Yeah, no dollar amount's going to make Dana White go, yeah, have Brock Lesnar for a night.
And now this came through the wires before we went on the show, and Sir Rock and our tech producer, who you can Skype anytime you wish to join the program, fans. put this up for us, that Brock Lesnar will not be able to fight for 180 days due to a medical suspension he received from the California State Athletic Commission. Now, the suspension is due to the cheek laceration he suffered during the loss. However, the number of days can be reduced as soon as he is cleared by an ophthalmologist. For fans that don't know, ophthalmologist means eye guy. Apparently, Lesnar made $400,000 for that one event. Mr. Kane, not the wrestler, the UFC guy, made $100,000 for the fight and $100,000 bonus for the victory. Now, a lot of fans watched that pay-per-view event like us, and instead of running the whole event because we're kind of pressed for time, the two storylines that came out of this event is obviously the Nexus continuing to work along with, you know, Cena, and obviously Cena didn't turn heel, so all of you in the group that had bragging rights on your sheet of when's Marky Mark going to turn against the Funky Bunch, it wasn't bragging rights, so you got a few pay-per-views left here. Go ahead.
I'm beginning to wonder if it's going to happen at all. And not to jump ahead on you a little bit, but after Raw last night, I just stood there and shook my head going, you have a golden opportunity here, WWE, and you're throwing it away.
Yeah, it seemed like this whole pay-per-view was kind of a throwaway. In my opinion, and I'll give my opinion on the entire pay-per-view, match of the night in my book was the opener, Daniel Bryan versus Dolph Ziggler. Set the mark, and as you watched on Monday Night Raw last night, you saw another amazing match, which once again, you know, you could almost see Michael Cole sitting there, the wheels going in his head going, wow, so this is professional wrestling. This is what the fans of Ring of Honor have been watching for years, and fans that have gone FIP and Dragon Gate and everything. And it was kind of weird to see CM Punk sitting out there at ringside, because I kept wanting Punk to go into headsets going, I've wrestled him, and damn, he's good. To Mace, match of the night for you was which one on the pay-per-view?
Definitely the opener. That was pretty much the only match I tried to stay awake for. Most of the other matches were putting me to sleep during the show.
Okay,
but yeah, the opener gets match of the night.
Give me yours. Was it also, are you in agreement with us that it was Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, or did you have another one that was actually entertaining to you?
I thought the Natty Neidhart match was the best match of the night. It was great. Yeah.
Oh, God, he's smirking again. This is why we don't want that Cam idea, because then he'll get ratted out. For fans that are wondering, hey, Alan, why the heck did Wade Barrett and the Nexus jump The Undertaker? Well, kids, if you haven't been to WWE Genesis today at all, you know, as we mentioned, that Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, is once again injured. I believe it's a shoulder injury that is now putting him on the shelf. So what better way to get rid of him than bury him in a bunch of dirt? And also set the seed that in case Brock and Dana White don't get to come and play in Atlanta, one of the three opponents seem to be going around the water cooler for WrestleMania. One is John Cena, two apparently is Sheamus, and three looks like Wade Barrett. Of the three of those, if you had a book Mania right now, Bug, who of the three would you have be in that main event against Taker?
John Cena.
So you're definite, you still haven't changed your mind. It's Cena, Taker is the best of all of it. Okay, Mace, pick me one of the three. Who would you put your Australian coin down and go, that's the one I want to watch. Forget these other two jabronis.
Well, given that the Australian coin's doing quite well at the moment, I'd probably actually take a bet at this point in time. Personally, I would like to see Sheamus, but we all know it's probably going to be John Cena because, hey, you got to get the golden boy over somehow.
That and it appears a couple of our fans in the chat room, I dig it, says they would like Sheamus. We'll let the rest of the room stir about that one as well. I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. I like the idea of Cena Taker, but I liked it when it was a unification. If you do Cena Taker belt, it worked. Unless Cena's full-fledged Nexus. And, you know, who knows from there. The worst part of this entire event for me, and I mentioned it on WrestleTalk Radio, and I mentioned it to anyone else that I've talked to in the last couple weeks, is this whole concept of Team SmackDown, Team Raw, why you do this event so close to Survivor Series. I've never understood. But I'm not supposed to understand it, I guess. Monday Night Raw itself, where, you know, what we thought was, oh crap, Cena won the belt to David Otunga. That seemed to turn into a TNA-like opening event where, all right, hold on, you know, Wat Barrett, why do we jump on? None of your business. GM says, oh, no, we're, you know, you're entitled to a rematch, and we'll set it up with a special ref. The next thing you know, it's Baron and it's Orton and Cena. Can I just see this? Baron orders Nexus for the belts, and for some strange reason, kids, your new WWE World Tag Team Champions are Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel? I don't understand the booking in this. I guess it's, as we saw later on in the evening, it's Utunga Tough Love. And as we also saw during the pay-per-view, Nexus is definitely going to be involved in some form or fashion in the Survivor Series. To Mace, would you like to see a traditional Survivor Series match, maybe with a Team Raw, Team SmackDown, and a Team Nexus? Or would you like to not even see Nexus involved in this event, in a Survivor Series type match?
I have been saying for years we need to bring back the traditional, not only Survivor Series match, but the tournament that it used to be once upon a time, where you'd have, you know, eight teams, and then four, then, you know, the two, then the survivors keep moving on until you have pretty much either one team or one person being a survivor. You know, I love those old days of that type of match, and I would love to see it return. But the best we'll get is maybe, you know, Team Raw versus Team Nexus at a pay-per-view, which, you know, I'd be happy with. At least it's something, and something's better than nothing.
Your thoughts on this, Bug?
I'm with Mace. I'd like to see it go back. And if they're gonna, I mean, Survivor Series is one of the original Big Four. I quite honestly would like to see them pay some homage to the old NWA and WCW by turning bragging rights into a War Games style match.
That would be definitely be interesting.
To be quite honest, I want to see it.
Anything can happen in WWE, as we found out. Now, if you've been watching their programming for the most recent time, you have seen a lot of these political events. Now, apparently, Vince McMahon himself is getting tired of people telling him what I can and can't do. I'm Vince McMahon, damn it. My wife's going to be a senator. Well, check this out. A few weeks ago, the state election board in Connecticut came up with an edict that said that they were not going to allow fans who were wearing WWE merchandise to vote. They were going to make them turn the shirts inside out or send them back to their cars, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, Vince has filed a lawsuit today against Secretary of State Susan Dizowitz. I probably got that name wrong, but hey, I'm not a professional radio personality. For that said directive that allows workers to refuse to registered voters showing up. McMahon said he filed it on behalf of himself, his company, WWE fans, and any Connecticut citizen who wants to exercise their constitutional right to vote. He called the order a flagrant act of censorship and discrimination.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a big stink in 2000 when that George Bush guy stole an election over disenfranchised voters in the state of Florida?
Oh, you betcha.
So, the state of Connecticut is putting out an edict requiring their poll workers to disenfranchise voters.
Pretty much.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, because if any judge in their right mind lets that happen, it's not going to be Senator McMahon. It's going to be Governor McMahon, because the McMahons will own that state.
Your thoughts on that idea, Mace?
It's American politics. I will stay out, as I do not know your system well enough.
And if you hear loud barking in the background, don't mind me. It's my executive producer telling me I need to go to break soon. That would be the Jack Russell known as Maggie. If you've been wondering, hey, when are they going to shoot that Tribute to the Troops event? I love watching that thing. Well, you're going to have to wait, because it looks like for the first time ever, Tribute to the Troops is going to be filmed in the United States at the Fort Hood military base in Killeen, Texas, I believe is how it's pronounced, on December 15th. So we feel kind of bad for the troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, but it's interesting. I believe UFC, I've read somewhere, also does an event at that particular base for their fans. So hopefully they get to check that out. If you've been getting sick and tired of seeing Vicky Guerrero on WWE TV, and you're going, yeah, I just want to watch Chavo, well, you're going to be seeing another Guerrero possibly soon. And that would be Shawn Marie Guerrero, who is the 20-year-old daughter of Vicky and the late, great Eddie Guerrero. She has reportedly been signed to a WWE developmental deal. According to sources, the young Guerrero has reportedly been telling fans at recent FCW Live events here in the Florida area that she has signed to a deal and waiting to begin her training. She has been ringside at several events over the years, including the annual Hall of Fame ceremonies, and apparently has also done some modeling. So looks like you're going to have another generation of Guerreros there, kids. Does this bother either one of you at all, that all these kids following their moms and dads and everybody into the business, or is like, you know, get a college education, then worry about wrestling?
Well, isn't that what Ted DiBiase Sr. told Teddy Jr.?
Pretty much.
I mean, as far as I know, the majority of them, I mean, aside from Dustin Runnels, Goldust, I thought Cody had a college degree, and quite a few of the other second and third generations also had college degrees or are working on them. I mean, wrestling's not going to be around forever for them, but I got no problem following the parents into the family work.
Mace, you've been in the ropes many a times. You have a problem with someone like Richie Steamboat or the Darso, Dakota Darso, or the Wyndham kids. Are you fine with this third and fourth and soon to be fourth generation of stars? Because I mean, you may end up with an Eric Watts situation in certain circumstances, or you may end up with a great situation like Randy Orton or Teddy DiBiase or Natty Neidhart.
Well, it all comes down to a few factors. Like, straight out, I don't mind, you know, the children coming into the business that their parents have been in. But at the same time, like, especially with Guerrero's daughter, she's only, what, 20 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if there's one thing that we have been told by many a wrestler that has come on this program, and I know I've been told by Matt Morgan on Twitter, go and get an education first. Because, as Bug said, you know, wrestling's not going to be around for everybody forever. You never know if you're going to make it to be the next big star or not. So, if they go out and get their education first, not a problem. And also, especially with a name like Guerrero, I hope that she's had training by the family first. Because if she's just going to go online straight from FCW, then I don't see how she's going to be any different from you know, any of the other silicone whores that they've got parading around wearing the quote-unquote diva's belt.
Well, hopefully she won't come to the ring and do this while they squeeze me craziness that her mom does.
She will. She'll probably be managed by her mother for the first 6 months, or at least until she turns 21 and Vince tells her to go and get her tits done.
Mm.
Oh, you
and then,
know.
And then I'll strip her down and put a belt on her for a little while and then kick her out the door 6 months later.
Oh, mm. You know Uncle Chavo got a hold of her.
I hope so.
Well, hopefully that's the case. Then we'll keep everybody with the Guerrero name on the straight and narrow. We're going to take our first time out here on All I Want of Wrestling Radio and Allison Chains Night. Don't forget Jimmy Rave, 10 o'clock, Sal Renaro, and Mike Posey to follow afterward. After the break, we will get into another fun evening of TNA wrestling this past Thursday night and what Paul Heyman was saying recently about his possible, now never going to happen, involvement in TNA wrestling. We'll be back after this break.
Missed it. This is what happens when WTR roasts Tim Stein.
Tim Stein is also not Jewish. It's horrible to assume the man is Jewish just because his name is Stein. You know, maybe that isn't even his real name. It's probably Goldstein or Steinberg. You don't know. He'd tell you himself if he were here tonight. I'm told he's taking the day off for some holiday of his. I don't remember what it's called, but he pronounced it with a
Tim really does work hard at making the WTR network what it is. Seriously, I'm not joking. Somebody pay this guy. He's like 65 years old. He needs retirement. He gets retirement. We get less Tim Stein. It's win-win, gang. Come on.
Happy birthday. You suck. You suck. You suck so bad. That's not true. You don't actually suck. You more or less blow. You've got a perfect face for gay porn, or at least a perfect mouth. That's what JJ tells me.
He's also not a pervert. The last couple of years, he had a wonderful and healthy relationship. He'd stay with her every night, constant, wild sex. You know, it's sad when they had to break up because he couldn't find the puncture repair kit. Don't get me wrong, they tried to patch things up, but Tim just couldn't bear the sight of her anymore. Not with a duct tape holding her neck closed.
Tune in to all the great programming on the Wild Hawk Radio Network, as you never know what will happen next.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forum. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown. It's the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
You know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. For as long as the internet wrestling community has been around, there have been people and internet radio shows that will bitch and complain about every little thing they see. Well, the crew over at WrestleTalk Radio are trying to change that by highlighting the positives of each and every WWE and TNA event. These wrestlers put their body on the line to entertain us each and every week. So how about we praise them instead of bitching about the little things that get to us? So with that in mind, you should come listen to WrestleTalk Radio Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, or right after any WWE or TNA pay-per-view right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Because this is how we say thank you to those that entertain.
Mr. Wrestling 3, a true legend in professional wrestling, Steve Carino, and if all those nicknames didn't really matter to you, it doesn't matter to many other people, because you're listening to the online world of wrestling radio with Alan Wojcicki.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio. Let's go to Wild Talk Radio Network on Allison's Change Night, music-wise. Do you want to go to WrestleNews.com, which is Wrestle and then NEWS.com? You'll be able to see a photo of the 20-year-old Shaw Guerrero. I believe Mace is the person who found this link for us. And interesting outfit, needless to say. A lot of interesting stuff went on this past Thursday night on TNA Wrestling Impact, and unfortunately, thanks to a relocation in the OWW Radio Studios, I lost it from my DVR. So thanks to the wonderful folks at YouTube, we were able to check that event out, and it was some wacky craziness going on. Needless to say, such as the return of the Ultimate Warrior, I'm in the mirror, I can be seen, someone in the room, now I can't be seen. So if you were wondering, hey man, who the heck was that girl on the screen during that segment? Well, that would be the former WWE knockout, Katie Leah Burchill, who is going to be debuting, as you heard the voice, she's going to be called Winter, as opposed to summer, or spring, or fall, or anything else. Very awkward outfit, needless to say. Once again, opening the show. This time it wasn't 55 minutes of blah, 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 with Immortal and RVD and Anderson, guys. It only seemed that way. Where we had the setup of a couple matches for the evening that involved a Ultimate X match with Kazarian and Ken Anderson, which surprisingly was a very good match for a guy who supposedly has, oh goodness, I'm going to botch the injuries they're claiming he's got. Hyperextended elbows, shoulder injuries. To either one of you, more probably to Mace than the Spug because he watches him on a more regular basis. This idea of bringing Ultimate X out whenever they want it to be, shouldn't this just be like the lockdown cage, just leave it at Destination X? Or is it fine to keep bringing it out whenever they feel like it?
If they want to keep it sort of special match flavor, then yeah, keep it for Destination X. Keep it for a pay-per-view. Don't trot it out on Impact. But yeah, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to get Rock to play the Muppet Show theme because this is practically what TNA Impact is turning into.
Oh, fine, do it. I don't care. Play it a Muppets. You can play it. You got Rolf the dog. We can definitely get Manumanum playing during the background for a while. That would be good. Because you're right, in certain aspects, it was fun to watch the old school Muppet event. And sometimes you could, it's almost like watching,
What's the Dark Side of the Moon, and you're supposed to be able to play with the Wizard of Oz if you're really lit up, and it'll follow along with it. Maybe the Manumanum thing would work here well. It all starts with, like I said, there was a lot of talking, more talking. God, too much talking, it seems like. And we're following along with the whole theme of total non-action wrestling.
Yeah, well, these guys did this quite a while back. People were timing the show at 2 hours, and they were coming up with, like, 10 minutes of wrestling, 15 minutes of wrestling, and the rest of it was, you know, backstage segments, talking in the ring, or hype packages. It seems they've taken that step backwards, whereas a few months ago, they looked like they were taking great steps forward. So I don't know what happened at Bound for Glory, what brick wall they hit, but they need to find a way to knock that wall down and go back to even a month ago when they're actually exciting people.
Spug, you're into the social networking and the Twit and all that kind of craziness, and it looks like the Robbie E and Cookie are involved in that stuff too, and we did not see a reappearance of the $15,000 woman on this past week's Impact. But having finally seen the former Rod Echoes, now Robbie E, take on Amazing Red and call out Jay Lethal for what looks like it's not a pay-per-view match so far as next week's Impact, you gave your opinions last week on the character. Any changes if you happen to take a glance and see this kid in action using the Ace Crusher, Diamond Cutter, whatever the heck is the finisher?
I didn't watch Impact this week. You know why?
Oh, you're so fired.
I didn't, and I will give you the absolute reason why. I couldn't be bothered to watch it. After watching that last week, I went, what the hell? Why am I putting my time and effort into watching this when it's your opening segment is 55 minutes long and it's nothing but talking?
Well, that's pretty much what they were saying. I believe it was Omega that brought up Sunday night, and also Tim Stein brought up that there was a mega drop in folks that had watched the post Bound for Glory event as opposed to last week. I believe it was something like a 400,000 viewer shift in action, and it's only, this is more for Spug and myself, because for fans that aren't aware of it, Mace is in Australia, so he may not get this. It's only going to get worse because what happens on Thursday nights in a couple more weeks? NFL games on NFL Network. Now, not all of America gets NFL Network. I don't, thanks to Bright House Networks, Cablevision being a pain in the buttocks, but also, so as mentioned, Winter debuted, very weird. As mentioned, four matches only on this show. You had Robbie E defeating Amazing Red. You had the Pope pimping in a club, and next thing you know, he's wrestling AJ Styles in a match where Bischoff says, no member of Immortal can interfere. So, of course, Abyss, even though he's a member of Immortal. Oh, it was no member of Fortune can interfere. I apologize. And, of course, Abyss is a part of Immortal, so he can interfere. Mickie James made her debut, taking out Sarah Stock, also known as Sarita. Tara jumps her after the match. And, of course, you had the Ultimate X match. Mace, you wanted to chime in with something, I believe.
Yeah, I want to know what portion of RVD's staff, the production crew, were smoking this week. Because I noticed before the, I believe it was the Knockouts match or something. Oh, no, it was before the Rob Echoes match. They
right.
played a replay hype package from the JWoww incident, which ran about 3.5 to 4 minutes. Then we get the guys coming back in, like we have Robbie E coming out, and then they basically replay parts of the thing again. You know, we watched the whole not even 2 minutes ago. Do we need to be reminded of the same thing 2 seconds later? I know McMahon thinks we're all dumb as bricks, but I want to know who in TNA thinks that we're done as bricks.
When you have a gentleman like David Tejada used to work for WWE directing the show, who knows?
That would probably make sense. I did get a good chuckle out of Brian Kendrick appearing at Mick Foley's book signing tour.
Oh, God, that was so weird.
But it was weird, but given the amount of weirdness that happens on the TNA show lately, this was actually quite amusing.
Yeah,
but overall,
subtext and double text, so like,
yeah.
You don't know about somebody getting an RBD stash, dude, but holy crap.
But, as you mentioned, you know, a 400,000 person drop in viewership is not a good thing for TNA. They need to start looking at these numbers and going, okay, where do we go wrong? Oh, wait, they.
Pretty much. This is the other part that we have this bug guy here for, and this will definitely take up the rest of this segment. As reported in last week's .NET Weekly audio show, I'm not a big fan of pubbing other people, but I have to, Paul Heyman feels that his negotiations with TNA came to a close a little while back when Dixie Carter refused to grant him the power to make talent changes without her consent. Or consent, if you're speaking the English language. Now, Paul's apparent budget plan called for roughly $1 million, and if you're a Dr. Evil fan, say it with me, $1 million in talent cuts, and apparently adding 200,000 in talent additions via the indie and international means. So, do the math, kids. Yep, that's right. He's saving the company apparently $800,000 from a talent budget. He also was frustrated that his current job description wasn't laid out in specific terms. Now, this is where it got interesting. He also wanted to hire former WWE creative member and current ROH creative member David Lagana and current Dragon Gate USA and former owner of Ring of Honor, Gabe Sapolsky, to work as part of his office team. Heyman insists that he has moved on and would pass if Carter reached out and offered the same deal he was previously seeking. To Spug first, because you're a former ECW fan and have preached on and off, yes, Paul's great, just don't let him have a checkbook. How much of this do we buy, and how much of this is a big pile of Colonel Potter horse hockey?
Not sure how much you want to buy, but it sounds to me like Dixie is dumb enough to give the book to Bischoff, Russo, and Hogan. So she's got to be dumb enough to, and I don't even want to say that because she seems like a very smart lady. But if you look at what Heyman did, okay? If you look at what Heyman did with little to no money, an extremely regional promotion and turn it into this worldwide global phenomena that it has become even almost 20 years later, you know, you have to look at it and go, perhaps he knows what he's doing. Because let's face it, Hogan and Bischoff and Nash, they got to play with Ted Turner's money. That's what they had. They had money. They didn't really have to do anything else. If I'm Dixie Carter and Heyman wants the ability to cut talent as he sees fit, and if he's the booker, you're damn right he should have that ability. You're damn right. Wow, no one's talking after me.
Are you comfortable with that notion that he wants to cut 800,000, but the problem is, if you're cutting 800 grand, that's one dude from the top talent area, Mason. You're cutting Hogan, or you're cutting Flair, or you're cutting Anderson, Sting, Nash is already gone, possibly. Sting is possibly gone again, but he wants to cut a million blocks. Sting was at one point making $500,000 on his own, Mace. So, what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Get him a pair of scissors. Let him make the cuts. Because if that's what it means to help to make TNA a profitable business, then definitely do it. You know, plus he's wanting to bring in young, new talent. What's the one thing every wrestling fan, especially the internet wrestling community, what have they been saying for years? We want new talent. We want to see what the next generation is going to do. We originally had that in TNA until it became the retirees and ex-WWE club. So why not give Heyman full control, let him make his cuts, let him bring in the new guys and see where the company goes? Because having the old guys there isn't doing much.
Yeah, we'll follow up with this and then we'll go to Spug with it. So are you cutting the talent that's sitting at home that hasn't been on in a while? Are you cutting current on-air talent? Be the booker for a second. Be the one that, be Heyman and say, okay, this guy stays, this guy goes. So at the top of your head, if you can name four or five people or six to equal the $1 million, what would it be?
Immediately Hall, Hogan, Bischoff, Russo, Nash, Hogan, Bischoff, Russo, Flair, and Sting are out the door. Immediately.
Wow.
Immediately. I don't care if that's going to leave a sour taste in folks' mouth. I don't care if it's going to piss a generation of WCW fans off that wants to see the NWO again. I really don't. I don't care. What it's going to do is free up spots for guys on the roster who deserve it and deserve a chance to shine, like Samoa Joe, like AJ Styles, like Matt Morgan, like Beer Money. Like those guys who deserve the ability to main event, chase titles, and put butts in the seats.
Yeah, great points taken there, Mace. Definitely great points to go from there. Some of the folks in our chat room, I dig it, is saying that he wants to give the book to Kevin Sullivan and Terry Taylor, that we need to breathe something fresh in. Likes the idea of Gabe coming in, says forget Heyman, he already killed one company. Luz, Flair, RVD, people like Eric Young, and that's the whole problem with me, because I like Showtime. I liked Showtime for years. And
don't be rid of Eric Young.
He's a mechanic that can get in there and give you a kick-ass match, even if it's a mannequin brought out by Orlando Jordan.
You don't get rid of Eric Young. Eric Young's all right. There's nothing wrong with Eric Young.
Okay, so go ahead, Mace. Get out your pen and start axing, or did Spug already take all the fun out of your cutting?
Well, first of all, I've got to quickly duck to the bathroom to shave three quarters of my head to sort of think like Heyman.
Put on the Eric Yankee tattoo.
Oh, dude, he can rival the immortal bald spot. I can tell you that when he takes his hat off. But yeah, pretty much I'm looking on the same lines as Spug. You know, Flair's out the door, Sting's out the door, Hogan's out the door, Russo out the door, just on principle. All the guys that have come in saying, you know, we'll make these guys, we'll help push these guys to the moon, kick them out the door, because they haven't done Fleet FA. You know, with any of these guys. You know, I want to see guys like Samoa Joe. I want to see guys like AJ Styles. One of the other things I do, rehire Christopher Daniels, for frag's sake. You know, give EY a decent go. You know, I want to see these young guys actually get up there and put on the matches we know that they've done in the past and can continue to do today. You know, I dig it saying in the chat room, Petey Williams, yes, bring Petey back. Hell, reform Team Canada, because I love that gimmick.
And get Johnny Devine back. He's sitting home in Canada doing other stuff, and we like Johnny on the show. And I'm not saying that because the guy was a friend. I'm saying it because the guy was fun to watch.
No, get Johnny back. Johnny's good. He's good for a laugh.
Well, let me get you back on track for a second here, and then we'll let Spug and the room get involved here, too. We'll go back to the point. I'm guessing Heyman is basically saying, Russo, bye-bye. Scott Conway, who's been working with Russo and was working for Ferrara, bye-bye. I'm bringing in Dave Lagana and Gabe Sapolsky, and that kind of sends like mixed messages that you're bringing in a former WWE writer and then a former ROH booker who's doing Dragon Gate USA. But, I mean, we watched all those products, and Lagana is doing really well in ROH with Delirious and previously with Adam Pearce. But that Lagana's not going to come cheap, and I'm sure Zapolsky's not going to come cheap, because if he comes, does that mean Dragon Gate's got to go under again? And your thoughts on the idea of these gentlemen coming in to take over creative? Is this bad, down the middle?
All right, Alan?
Sure.
What's the main reason you get into business?
Make money, dude, obviously. I want belts.
Okay. If you're looking at TNA's bank account right now, do you think they're anywhere near the black?
From what I heard, yes, not by much.
Okay.
But, of course, they're not a publicly traded company, so they don't have to cough up that information.
They don't, but just speculation. Do you think, honestly, do you think on a consistent basis that they are anywhere near the black?
Depends on telling you. I mean, me, honestly, right. I'm not 100% sure. I don't have economic background to say yes, no, you're good, you're bad. And I know the old adage, you just spend money to make money.
You have to spend money to make money. And if you spend money poorly, okay, you don't spend money to spend money, all right? You don't pull a Steinbrenner. You don't pull a Steinbrenner of the mid-'80s Yankees. And just throw money at people to throw money at them and pray that they, you know, that they sign or that they stay put. You invest it wisely. And if Gabe Sapolsky, Paul Heyman, and Dave Lagana, if those guys are going to come into your company, shed the dead weight, get rid of the bad investments that you've made, and start fresh with new talent, with a mixture of your old talent that you've had, your AJ Styles and whatnot. Bring in guys who are familiar with the company, like Christopher Daniels and Petey Williams and Hotshot Johnny Devine. You know, if you bring in guys like that, if you cut that dead weight, you bring in that mix of old veterans, and you have, you know, new talent, people who are familiar with the company, and you get rid of these ridiculous appearance contracts. You say, this is what you're making per year. This is, you know what I mean? You sign them to a base contract. You get rid of these ridiculous per-appearance contracts, or you can only appear so many times on television. And you really want to help your product? Go live on Thursday nights. Get rid of the review show that you do afterward. Go live on Thursday nights. From 9 to 11, which I think they already are, aren't they? Or are they still pre-taped?
Which one? TNA or Reaction?
TNA.
Both are pre-taped.
Yeah, everything's pre-taped. And it looks like Reaction is possibly done. I think they had a 10-episode run, and we'll get into that later on. But go ahead and finish your point, sir.
You go live. It cuts out the spoilers and people fighting. And I know they have a deal with Universal, so you could do a bulk of your television there. But if you travel around the country, if you hit the small venues, the smaller venues, the 2,000 and 3,000 seat arenas on college campuses, you build up your following in no time. In absolute no time. These are simple, basic booking decisions. that even the dumbest of independent professional wrestling promoters knows. And yet somehow a company on a national scale full of people with the combined centuries worth of knowledge of the wrestling industry fail to grasp. And it baffles me that this company is still around.
Yeah, Spug's definitely preaching the Bible according to the Book of Man. This is the exact same thing. I would say the exact same thing. Small arenas, travel around, cut your dead weight, bring in the guys that will probably, like, okay, we've got Gabe Sapolsky and all that. Okay, they're not going to come and want multi-million-dollar paychecks. Remember, Gabe's been working Ring of Honor. He doesn't make a small fortune. You know, personally, I probably would have done away with Gabe and brought in Kevin Sullivan. But, you know, these things, they need to start looking outside of Florida. Being stuck at the Universal Studios isn't doing them any favors. You take a look at WCW when they used to do that with, I think it was Disney MGM or mm-hmm. whatever studio they used to do it out of once upon a time.
Disney MGM.
Yeah, those are like some of their worst looking, worst presented shows with a crowd that really didn't care about the show that was going on.
Well, they didn't care because they were theme park folks that were moved in and out. And I had friends who worked for Disney MGM at the time. They literally had signs. They filtered out wrestling fans and had applause and boo and told the audience what to do and not to do. And if you've been to a TNA event and Universal, that's probably the way it'll be go there. I'm sorry to cut Mace off, but we're against time here. Going to break, coming back in the 10 p.m. block. First up on the show in the trifecta of interviews will be Jimmy Ray. If you have questions for Jimmy, feel free to log on to Skype and get on with Sir Rockin', or you can get involved with our 800 line, which is 877-588-9877, option 1, here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. See you on the other side of this break, brought to you again by Allison Chains.
Certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio, or anything goes. Or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talky Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indies, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're upset with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's worth away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Eric Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Nick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive sports for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. as well. News articles and blogs from some of the best known internet wrestling stars today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage, but Jerry.
Candice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal. Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site that grows you. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Ladies and gentlemen, with the advent of geek culture becoming mainstream, we here at the Wild Talk Radio Network are doing our best to capitalize on this phenomenon. In that vein, I, Mace, a co-host of Otaku Talk Live, have decided to move a small section of what we would talk about on OTL to its very own podcast. That podcast being Fashion the Book. Now, what you'll hear on there is myself going through select readings of this week's comic book, and I just let you know what's going on. So, every Thursday, maybe Friday, maybe Saturday, you'll be able to hear me talk about comic books. Okay, maybe boring, maybe not, who knows? The only way you're going to find out is to go over to the archives section of WildTalkRadio.com and download the show and have a listen for yourself. That's Fashion the Books, somewhere near the end of the week, right here on WildTalkRadio.com.
Hey, this is Charlie Haas, one half of the world's greatest tag team, and you're listening to me on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
And welcome back to the second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Undergroundradio.com supplies us with the 800 numbers, so you don't have to waste your time. It's 877-588-9877, option 1. If you are a Skyper, like we are here on Wild Talk Radio Network, you can feel free to Skype Sir Rockin, because we do have our first guest with us on the line. And he is currently a member of the Rampage Pro Wrestling roster, which is based out of Georgia, the Warner Robins area to be specific. This Saturday they do have an event called Docktoberfest, and if you go to RampagePro Wrestling.net, all one word, no spaces, you can see the really cool-looking poster that this event has got going on. He has been a former member of TNA, ROH, and Indies all around the United States, and has done several tours around the world. The one and only Jimmy Rave has graced us with his presence tonight. Thank you for stopping by tonight, sir.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
We're doing pretty good. Lots of fun stuff has gone on for you in recent months. The last we had talked, it was during the Bryan Danielson 90-day clock watch, and Bryan came in to work for Rampage Pro Wrestling, and I believe you were involved in that match. Talk about the event that went on, and were you a fan of just sitting there going, dude, you can tell me. I'm not going to tell anybody else. You're signed still, right? Did he give any inklings of what was going on?
No, he didn't give me any indications of what was going on. Like, even the ride down to Warner Robins from Atlanta, you know, he didn't tell me anything. You know, I really believe that they released him from his contract, but I think once the 90 days was creeping up, they kind of had to rethink their strategy. but that's just my opinion. He never told me otherwise, but hey, it was awesome having him there, and it was really different, you know, for him to be in Georgia, and he hadn't wrestled there since, I think he said 1999, and the atmosphere was just awesome, just listening to the crowd in Georgia. It was not like a southern crowd, it was like a New York or Philadelphia crowd where they're chanting, you know, singing a song with him and throwing in ties and everything. It was so awesome. It was very surreal.
Now, was he signing ties like he did at other events? Was he actually an autographing them for folks?
Yeah, and then he went out there and like showed all of our fans a great time, and showed all the wrestlers a great time, and gave some of the younger guys some really good advice. And the last, you know, 14 minutes of the match was awesome. It came down to him and Kyle Matthews, and it was incredible. But Kyle couldn't get the job done, and Brian came out victorious. But yeah, afterwards he sat there and signed ties, took pictures, and had a great time.
Jimmy Ravis, the guest, feel free to chime in if you're a Skype user or on the 800 line. Bug is with us from Wrestle Talk Radio and the Otaku Talk Live event as well. Mace is in and out. He's making lunch. He lives in Australia. So give fans that weren't with us the last time that you were on the show some background on the Rampage Pro Wrestling promotion itself. And are there possible plans to operate in other parts of Georgia? Has that already gone on? Any inkling?
Well, right now we're not trying to get too far ahead of ourselves. We're really focusing on teaching people that, you know, we're at Johnny T's and Warner Robins every first and third Saturday of every month. And we've done outside shows, and that might be a possibility in the future, but right now we're really focusing on our television product and revamping that. You can check that out at RampageProWrestling.net. We stream the television show every week. I believe they're updated every Saturday afternoon, so you can watch a new episode every week. And, you know, we're really just, you know, working to have a great roster and have a great product to produce, and, you know, doing stuff within. You know, we've been around. September 4th was our two-year anniversary, and for being a company that's so new, we have all the right pieces of the puzzle in place with guys like myself, Sal Lenaro, Bill Barons, and Georgia legends like Ben Masters, and then a whole bunch of good up-and-coming guys like Kyle Matthews, Chip Day, Mike Posey, Corey Hollis. He just was nominated for Pro Wrestling Illustrated Rookie of the Year. We have so many, you know, awesome guys in place, and some guys that people might not have heard of, like Sean Banks, Screw Jones, J-Rod, the Exotic Ones, you know, the Usual Suspects, Murder One, and AJ Steele. Those guys are just a whole bunch of guys that really can go, and like we've really picked the cream of the crop of all the places we could find in Georgia, and it's just really excited to be a part of.
I have a question for Jimmy.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Looking over your... I have to be honest, I had never really heard of you. And that's nothing against you at all. And looking back through your history, I'm like, oh my God, how have I not heard of him? You
right.
know? And... I saw that you worked with CZW, and I have a particular bias against that company, only because I don't like the niche market that they try to fill, because I think it takes away from what wrestling is and has been. Did you ever have any thoughts or inklings to get involved in the Cage of Death side of that, or did you try to stay away from that when you were in Combat Zone?
Really, they brought me into new technical stuff. Like, I wrestled with Alex Shelley, and we had, like, a 15-minute match for the first 10 minutes. We didn't even touch the ropes. I mean, like, it was really, you know, like, at the time I was there, it was me, Alex Shelley, Roderick Strong, B-Boy, Trent Acid, trying to think of who else, Jimmy Jacobs. I think they brought Joey Ryan in a few times. There was just a whole bunch of Sanjay, Amazing Red, you know, just a whole bunch of guys that they had there that were doing a wrestling aspect of it. And I believe they still have that going on for them right now. And there is a niche of pro wrestling that wants to see that over-the-top stuff, and that's fine. It's just like in any other entertainment business, like, there's a niche of people that just want to watch horror films and stuff like that. So, like, if that's what people want to see, that, you know, like, if it's done properly and not dangerously, while, you know, anybody's, you know, life's really in more danger than it needs to be, then that's their prerogative. But for me, I was never put in a position where they asked me to do anything like that, so. I think they knew what they were getting when they brought me aboard.
Would you ever consider doing anything like that? I mean, if the situation were right, or if the storyline or something called for it?
I mean, I've had some pretty bloody and gruesome things. Like, last year I feuded with Necro Butcher for the better part of 2009 and Ring of Honor, and those weren't any walks in the park. And even back in 2005, when I was cheating with CM Punk and Ring of Honor, our dog collar match is really bloody and violent, and our cage match too. I mean, I've dabbled in it, and as long as it is, it's there to further a storyline or enhance either myself or my opponent, then if it's in the right spot in wrestling, I think it's needed.
Now, you brought up feuding with Necro Butcher for the better part of 2009. Is his head really as hard as the concrete from the IWA Mid-South Arena made it look when Samoa Joe slammed him on his face?
I think that was at the ECW Arena, actually. But, yeah, I mean, like, he's pretty indestructible, man. Like, he's one of the smartest guys I've ever talked to in my life, and he's got one of the hardest heads, so at least he's got something protecting all that brain he's got.
Jimmy Rave is our guest here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio, and if you're in the wildtalkradio.com chat room, you can do just like the gentleman known as I Dig It. And he wants to know, says, Jimmy, your work is always enjoyable to watch. He wants to know, will you be possibly coming to the Niagara Falls region anytime soon? We have popular locals here such as Tyson Dukes and Cody Diener. Any thoughts of working in that area? Have you worked in that Buffalo, Niagara, Canada area at all?
I think I was up there a handful of times for Ring of Honor, and I've talked to a couple of promotions there lately about doing some stuff there. So just keep checking me back on my Facebook and whatnot, checking my schedule. It's definitely a possibility. And as a side note, I think Tyson Dukes and Cody Dean are awesome both. Actually, the original Plex, like, I know, When I was in TNA with Lance Hoyt, they were wanting to bring Cody Diener in as a roadie for the Rock and Rave Infection, which I thought would have been so awesome. But we didn't get a chance to do that.
Interesting. The same person in the chat said, I recently saw Bushwhacker Luke wrestle, quote, if you can call it that. Have you ever wrestled a veteran who just doesn't have it anymore, and how did you handle the situation if you did?
I've wrestled Tommy Rich a few times in the last couple of years, and he's not what he was in 1982, but those guys still have their place in wrestling history, and you know, they've paved the way for me and my peers to be in a successful spot and have the business still be alive. And you have to just treat them with respect, and it really depends on which guys you're talking about. Some people just want to see guys for nostalgia reasons, you know, like, and you really, if that's the reason, if the veteran, knows what he's doing. He knows that why people are there to see him, you know what I mean? And, you know, you just got to respect their place in wrestling history. And, you know, a lot of those guys are going to do anything more that they know they can do. And they're just, you know, for that throwback moment, you know?
I get it.
The guess. You got it? Well, go ahead, man.
I get what he's saying. I get what he's saying. I worked a show back in April that Honky Tonk Man was at. He main evented, and I remember watching him in the 80s and early 90s, and then watching him now. You know, he's a shadow of his former self. I've seen Abdullah the Butcher. You know, I loved Abdullah the Butcher, but he can't. Not to say that he could move before, but, you know, if you look at that man's forehead, it is just this giant cauliflower on the top of his forehead from all the shots he's taken and stuff from over the years.
But the dude makes awesome ribs and Chinese food, doesn't he? If you live in it's in the Atlanta area, isn't his restaurant, Jimmy?
Yeah, it's in Atlanta. It's awesome. My first couple of years in the business, we used to go there every Saturday before shows and eat with him and listen to stories and stuff like that. And I wrestled on a few shows that Abby's booked for us. And, you know, like, he's another one, you know, like, you know, he's been doing it for, like, over four decades, and, you know, like, you really have to, you know, he knows he's not going to go to WWE or have another big run. A man's almost 70, you know, like, but if people are going to, people still pay to see Abdullah come out and stab people in the head, you know, like, he's going to have to get in the ring. So, you know, I respect the nostalgia aspect of it, and I, those guys are usually there at special attractions anyway, and, you know, I think it's cool, like, you know, to give them a pat on the back. I mean, like, a lot of the shows around here in Georgia, Pretty Boy Doug Summer still wrestles on, and, you know, like, he's one of the hardest working guys in Georgia right now.
And for fans that aren't aware of it, the event is Oktoberfest. It is this Saturday night at Johnny G's Fun Center. And I believe this event is kind of named that due to Dr. Gaten being involved. We'll ask Sal the same question, but in your opinion, Dr. Gaten's involvement in this main event with the new exotic ones and the usual suspects, I believe involved, if a certain team wins, he gets someone in the cage for 5 minutes. Can you shed some light on this for us?
Yeah, he gets the exotic ones manager, Big Ben Barfield, and he'll if he gets them in the cage for 5 minutes, there's a lot of retribution to be paid. 2 months ago, Dr. Gaten had to be hauled off in an ambulance after an attack, and you know, there's just been a whole bunch of incidents where the exotic ones have tried to keep Dr. Gaten away from running Rampage and being there every week. So the stipulation was made by Sour and Harley that if the suspects win the tag team titles from the exotic ones, then Dr. Gaten gets 5 minutes in the cage with their manager, Big Barfield.
I wanted to ask, because I was thinking about this, and he was talking about the nostalgia and everything. If you had the opportunity to pick anyone from yesteryear or today to wrestle, who would you pick?
Probably Kurt Hennig, because I was just such a big fan of his work, and, you know, like, he's just one of the guys that always captivated me, and I thought that he did a good promo, and, like, the bumps he would take, and, you know, those matches with Bret Hart were, like, just amazing, and I just really idolized him. And, like, really one guy that I always wanted to work with, and we only got to do one match together in TNA, was Bobby Roode, because he emulates Kurt Hennig so much. I think he's probably one of the most underrated wrestlers, you know, in wrestling today. So
In your free time, do you actually, have you watched any of the recent TNA or WWE programming, or has life just gotten so out of hand that you're lucky you get to do the Rampage event?
Yeah, like, a lot of my time is focused on growing Rampage and going to different shows around Georgia and looking at new talent to, you know, start at Rampage and evaluate. And, like, I've been doing a whole bunch of seminars lately and stuff like that, and going out to California and wrestling for some promotions up there. So, you know, mainly right now, like, you know, I try to watch as much as I can, but definitely not as much as I should. And then I haven't watched TNA in about 2 months, but, you know, like, my problem with TNA since I've left is, like, there's just so much talent there, and, like, there's just not enough time to give those guys for them all to shine. You know, like, there's just, they have, you know, over 60 guys under contract and only 2 hours of you know, television a week to do it in.
And that's where it gets crazy. Jimmy Rave is still here with us for the next couple minutes. If you have any questions, feel free to Skype Sir Rockin or 877-588-9877. Even though you kind of answered the question, I did get wanted to know if you talked with the currently named Vance Archer, known as Landfoot, your former Rock and Rave Infection partner. How do you personally feel his career has gone since he's left TNA? Do you even talk with Lance?
I talk to Lance at least 2 or 3 times a month. You know, we still have a pretty solid friendship, and you know, like we were never the kind of partners that travel together or anything like that. Like he was pretty embedded in TNA when I got there. I was kind of the new guy and whatnot, and I had my friends from Ring of Honor, like the Machine Guns and Zonda and Jay Lethal. So I kind of did always I was Lance, but like over the years that we were tagging together, like we became really good friends. And man, I am nothing but happy for his success. Like, you know, like I really think that he's doing much better now than he ever did in TNA. You know, like. I think they found the right fit for him right now, and every now and then I'll look at some stuff that he's done on YouTube or whatnot lately that he's told me about or somebody else has told me about, and I'm nothing but happy for him. I think he's one of the nicest guys I've met in wrestling, and one of the most genuine people I've met.
The address for the website, let me just get this in real quick before we get to do it. The address is rampageprowrestling.net. If you're wondering, hey, I live in Georgia, I want to check that out. Go ahead, Spud, please.
I'm sorry, I'm horrible. I interrupt all the time. But I wondered, and this just kind of bugs me from time to time. You see younger guys in the back at shows who are a few months removed from their formal training or are in the process of it and are timid to come up to guys that may have been brought in to draw a name for the show and ask questions and pick their brain. Do you encourage that, or do you kind of tend to shy away from the guys who want to come up and ask questions?
Nah, man, like, I always explain it like this. There's two ways to success. So, you know, the bumpy road where, you know, you don't ask questions and you don't go to seminars and you kind of learn by yourself. And that was kind of the way I went. And then I realized, you know, about 5 or 6 years into it that, hey, man, like, I can ask my peers and I can ask veterans, like, some questions to get a shorter path to success, you know, and I totally encourage it. And it was something like, you know, even, you know, the last few years I was at Ring of Honor, I traveled a lot with Brian Danielson, and I just watched him, you know, like, you know, give his advice, and we'd shoot ideas off of each other. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted him at Rampage when we had the opportunity to have him there, is because he was able to lend so much of his knowledge to other guys and really answer some of the questions that they had. I just did a few shows with Delirious and Paul London, and myself were on, and then, you know, guys were just absorbing all the information those guys had. It's just something that, you know, like, if you know, there's never a point in pro wrestling where you really stop learning, and if you do, then the whole challenge of it is totally gone. I'm always in the position where I'm trying to challenge myself and set new goals and stuff like that, and I get a lot of benefit out of helping guys achieve success and helping molding people into successful wrestlers, and that's what I'm trying to do with Rampage, is take these guys and take them to the next level and get them ready for TNA or WWE or Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate USA or Evolve or whatever they might be coming up. So I'm really at that level to where, you know, I was fortunate enough to, you know, see the world and wrestle for New Japan and Dragon Gate and Ring of Honor and TNA, and I did some stuff for WWE, and I had all these great opportunities, and I want to see my friends and people that I think really care about the business get those opportunities, you know, because, you know, like, I was just a kid that was lucky enough to have some doors open for me, you know, and I started wrestling when I was 15, and then, you know, by the time I was 19, you know, like, I was, you know, getting flown around and getting to see the world. So I really get a lot of satisfaction out of helping guys out and helping them get to the next level.
All right, at this point, we're going to let our guests go because guest number two is waiting in the wings. The event, as mentioned, Doctoberfest. If you live anywhere near Johnny G's Fun Center in Warner Robins, Georgia, log on to RampagePoWrestling.net to check it out. I believe he's mentioned you can see some of that stuff on the TV on that site. Thanks to Jimmy Brave for stopping by. We'll let him get to his next appointment. Coming up is the current GM, commissioner, guy who says everything, and former YRR member Sal Renaro will be joining us from the other side of the break here on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show! So tune in! Listen! I demand it.
In case you missed it, this is what happens when you tune in to Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Mrs. Carino is on Online World of Wrestling Radio?
She sure is.
Oh, my God, this is awesome. So, Mom, you got any questions for your son? You want to air some funny stories about him?
Oh, there's so many stories I can tell you that it would take hours.
Are they going to be
hours?
I don't want to.
Are you?
Whoa.
I have a question for Mrs. Carino.
Okay.
I have a picture of me when I was about 4 years old in a pair of yellow rain boots, yellow underwear, and a bandana doing the Hulk pose. It's in a photo album somewhere. Do you have any embarrassing photos of Steve that you could tell us about?
No. Well, it's not so much embarrassing. But there was a contest one time.
Liar.
And him and his buddy dressed up like the Rock and Roll Express. Well, they didn't win the contest, but years later, I ran into Ricky Morris. So I was going to be at this show, so I took a picture with him. He just about died. Sorry.
By the way. Remember to tune in to Online World of Wrestling Radio, 9 p.m. Eastern Tuesday, on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Hey everyone, this is Phil Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kind of did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer. I am the host of this.
Oh my God, shut up. Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday night, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
Consider the professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indies, all this and more can be found on one site. The Zero Set, whenever they wrestling. Head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, news, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's look away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Eric Bischoff,
Big Vicious,
Nick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video, the internet has the offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best known internet writers we all know today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christine Page,
Brett Derry, Kenneth Michelle,
Christy Hemming,
Jay Lethal,
Brett
the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Woogerman,
and tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith,
Jack Evans,
get into the world of wrestling, online, it's the site for pro views, Online World of Wrestling, www.onlineworldofwrestling.com, check it out today.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to the Wild Talk Radio Network, and the amazing band from Seattle, that is Allison Chains Night. That song will be Wood that you're hearing in the background, and it's kind of hard to find. The first time I ever saw it was on the single soundtrack, which is a really cool movie that Cameron Crowe did in the early 90s that actually featured Allison Chains and also Soundgarden and some of the members of Pearl Jam playing a part of a band that Matt Dillon belonged to, so definitely check that out. 877-588-9877, option one is the way to join us here on the show. Spug and Mace have stuck around because our next guest hails from one of the coolest places in the world. Now, I'm telling you, if you've never seen him in person, when he first hits the ring and you hear that he's from Hollywood, California, you're probably scratching your head. And then when he hits the ring, then you're going, okay, now I'm really interested. If you've watched NWA Wildside, NWA Anarchy, Full Impact Pro, Ring of Honor in the last few years, and you attend Rampage Pro Wrestling events, you know the gentleman. He has got many different nicknames. He's been known as Sal the Pizza Boy. Wow. Sal Del Rio. the Unrated, the big deal. He is the one and only Sal Renaro joining us here. Good evening, and thanks for taking time for us, sir.
Oh, thank you. How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, we're having a blast. The first question out of the gate,
you've been in the business since 2002 and trained by a Georgia Mid-South Eastern veteran in Rick Michaels.
Looking you are on my Wikipedia page, aren't you?
No.
That is all false information.
Oh, I'm looking. So you weren't trained by Rick Michaels?
Then no, I trained some with Rick, but that was after I had already been working for 3 years.
Right. We'll let the big boss Brad Dykens know, because your online world of wrestling worldofwrestling.com profile lists that you were solely trained by him. But the question I was going for is, from 02 to 2010, just as an overall question, in your mind, things you wish you had known in 02 that you know now in 10, if you could backtrack and sit Sal Renaro 2002 down, is there one or two points you would say, dude, you need to do this and this, and you'll go places and avoid this and this?
Well, actually, I think you could even fast forward it to the 05 Sal Renaro, sitting down the 02 Sal Renaro, and he was smarting him up about this magical wonderland. Some of you call it a gym. O2 Sal Renaro was about 112 pounds, 90 pounds of that being hair. And I really, like, back then, you know, it was my, I grew up a fan, you know, like as most independent wrestlers did, you know, especially when you're under 6 foot. Yeah, I grew up as a fan, and I remember as a kid, I never got the physique gimmick. I don't know why. It never clicked in my brain that everybody was, you know, 6 foot and 300 pounds. I go to the live shows. I was a kid, you know, I was 12, so of course everybody was bigger than me. Once puberty hit, I was going to be Jack too. And puberty hit, and not that hard, and not that well. So I'm just a naturally small dude. So once I started working in actually 99, and I just thought, you know, well, I know every, you know, I can name any match from any card, you know, especially WWF stuff. Like, I just sat down and memorized it, you know. Like, that's what I studied at home. When I was at school and teachers were talking, I was writing down the full In Your House 2 card and stuff like that. So I figured that's going to take me places. I was a master of the WWF trivia game, you know? So 2010 style would sit down 2002 style and smack him around a little and tell him, probably going to have to put some weight on.
Now, looking at your Wikipedia online world of wrestling, whatever you want to call it, profile, I see that you wrestled for the Ultimate Christian Wrestling Promotion.
Ooh. Yes.
And you were their heavyweight champion over Dustin Powers in March of 2008.
I'm actually still champion.
I'm looking around, and I was wondering if that was the promotion that Sting and Ted DiBiase had put together.
No, this was an offshoot of that, actually. This was actually put together by Rob Adonis, who is a preacher, actually was the man that presided over my wedding. And he's, you know, full-blown Christian, and he, you know, it was basically we would do a show, and then at the end, they would actually have a play, which I was never fortunate enough to be a part of, because I love plays. Who doesn't love a play? But they were all Jesus plays and stuff, and I guess I wasn't Jesus-y enough, which is a shame, because before I cut my hair, a lot of people told me I looked like Jesus, but I digress.
Well, what was it like wrestling for that promotion? I don't know if you are a Christian by faith or Catholic or Muslim or Jew or whatever have you. I'm just wondering what it was like wrestling for somebody, because I'm sure there are things that you could do and couldn't do, and things that, you know, you couldn't say that you probably could say in a regular indie promotion.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely G-rated. Big group prayers, which I'm not accustomed to at shows, but Rob, though, you know, he's a man of faith, Rob is one of the funniest guys I know, and
him and I became friends because I was quoting Anchorman, and he jumped in. And if you can quote Anchorman, you're okay on my team. And one of my favorite times ever was I was sitting there, and Rob was talking about something, and the curtain fell down, and he goes, "Oh, my God." And I stopped him and go, "Rob, no. Oh, our God." So, but it's just, at the end of the day, you know, it was fun. You know, he drew more kids than anything. It was parents bringing their children. I think more for the morality plays, but anytime you can work up kids, I'm in a good mood. If I can make a kid upset or happy, because towards the end there, I was working as a babyface for him too, and one of the proudest moments of my life was I was just doing arm drags at the beginning of a match, and I did a quick sequence right back to the arm drag, and two kids in the front row chest bumped. I said, I've done something good if I can get a chest bump out of people. I've succeeded in life. It's all downhill from here.
Perhaps it's a bad time to tell you that I hated Anchorman.
Oh, come on.
I'm not a Will Ferrell fan. I think his brand of comedy is a bit immature.
Which, you know, you say that as if it's a bad thing.
He's not my cup of tea. He's not. Like,
that's fine. You can have that taste. It's cool.
All right.
I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to point fingers. Just, if you like crappy stuff, that's cool. You know, like, my wife doesn't like tomatoes. You know, whatever. That's life.
I've never heard Eddie Izzard called crappy, sir.
Yes.
Now, it's funny you brought up the Christian wrestling crew, because you work for that kind of an organization, but yet you're in the very cocky and arrogant YRR with Kenny King and Jason Rance and
Jason Blade.
And do you miss those kind of events? I know FIP's kind of been on the back burner because Sal Haomi's been working with Evolve and Dragon Gate. Do you miss the YRR gimmick that was also used in ROH for a while?
Definitely. Especially since, you know, that's the epitome of me turned up anyways. You know, Sal Renaro, the human being, is just a fun-loving, goofy guy that, you know, is outlandish. And so being in the YRR, that was the perfect role for me. I was put in the YR pretty much to keep the group together. I was the talker, and you know, I was the singles guy. Dave had Kenny and Jason as the tag guys, and Jason was shoot the YRR. So that was every day for him, you know. So we had a great time though, and coming up with the ridiculous promos was great, but we were very well protected, and I don't know why. But Dave was in love with the gimmick, and we had, you know, Rain was with us, and Becky Bayless was with us, and I think for a short time Lacey was with us, and we just had a bevy of beautiful women with us that were intelligent, you know, and everybody knew their role. I've been a part of groups before where guys would butt heads, and this was the complete opposite, where we were all having a great time. We were going out there. We were getting to work guys like the Briscoes and Delirious and Tyler Black and Jimmy Jacobs and, you know, a billion other just great talents, you know, which elevated us, which, you know, made us look like stars because we were keeping up with these guys. And it's one of the funnest times of my whole career, definitely.
But my favorite match of yours I attended in person was the 2008 Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup. And it wasn't your match with Chris Gray, formerly of the British Lions. It was one of the best heel versus heel matches. And he's laughing because he knows what I'm going to. And that would be you versus the 633,000-time Texarkana TV champion, Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney, where it basically turned into a stall fest, who can outheel, memories of that match, and as someone who's been a heel for a while, the majority of your career, how hard is it to do a babyface situation?
Well, I've worked baby before, and my grandma always said I was a babyface, so I had that going for me. But this wasn't, I will never forget, because that day when we got to the show and they were like, well, it's you and Sweeney. Sweeney and I sat down, and it was a pebble being pushed down a mountain where, you know, one guy, it was either him or I, came up with one idea, you know, and then just slowly snowballed into, oh, well, what if we add this? Oh, well, what if we do a chicken spot there? Well, what if we do a crisscross spot? Well, you know, what if I make you look up and, you know, what if we do 80s WWE spots, you know? What if we do earthquake slashes to bonsai drops? And it was almost as enjoyable, I believe, for the boys in the back to watch as it was for us to perform. Just because us throwing our just whatever ideas off the top of, you know, whatever we can come up with, I thought was, it's one of my favorite matches, too. And I remember coming home and trying to, she was my fiance at the time, but my wife now, she hates my stalling tactics. And I do it a lot still on Georgia Indies, mainly because it's almost asked for. But Sweeney, I was trying to explain to my wife everything we had done, and she was in so much pain just listening to it. I couldn't wait to get the DVD to show her this masterpiece of a match. But I honestly believe it's a, much like Will Ferrell, it's a, either you love it or you hate it type of match. But personally for me, it was just so enjoyable getting to sit down with Sweeney and just watch this tiny speck snowball into a mammoth piece of a match that, it was by far one of the most, while I was in the ring, enjoyable matches. Just listening to the crowd reaction, especially since we were both heels, and the crowd couldn't have cared less when we started, but by the time it was done, I think everybody really enjoyed the show they got that night.
Sour and R joining us here on All I Wall of Wrestling Radio. The event is Docktoberfest this Saturday in Warner Robins, Georgia. To follow up with that, as mentioned, you're a natural heel, yet somehow in this organization, Sal Renaro is a babyface? How hard is this for you to dig?
There's times where, especially in ring, fortunately as the general manager, we have local television on, My Network. We've taken over the My Network time slot essentially from SmackDown, but we also air Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, on My 41 in Macon, Georgia. And I get to do a lot of the vignettes backstage, and that's my comfort zone. So it's not a big stretch for me there. I'm handling things the way Sal Renaro would, just against heels as opposed to two heels. But in the ring, it's a completely different story, and it's one of the reasons I'm excited to be a babyface here, is because I've never had a babyface run anywhere before. So I'm not able to rest on my laurels, and as, you know, as a heel, I know my weakness, I know my strengths, and I know when to go with what. But as a babyface, it's pretty much all new to me, especially to a crowd that I actually was a babyface from, or I was a heel with Rampage when it first opened its doors on Labor Day of 2008. I was the very first match, and I was a heel until June of this year. So these people know me as a heel at heart. So convincing them that, hey, I'm actually a decent dude, I was just I may have done some scandalous things in my past, but I'm cool now. Like, come on, I'll high five your baby. I won't spit on him this time. It's tricky, but they're coming along. They've turned over the leaf with me. I have been fortunate enough to be given my own wacky, which helps a lot. Like I said, it's not a... One thing I've always preached about babyface and heels is, and I got it directly from Mick Foley's first book, where he said that Michael Hayes told him, you know, a heel has to believe what he does. Well, as a character, whether I'm a babyface or a heel, I feel as long as I believe what I'm doing is correct, then it's correct, and it's how it's presented. So I'm still the Sal Renaro character at heart. I'm still the, you know, wink-wink behind your back and see if I can get you when you're not looking type of guy. But now the crowd's in on the wink-wink with me as opposed to against me.
Now, we've had several people on this program, and we always ask, you know, the standard stock question of, what advice would you have if anybody wanted to get into business? And I want to switch that up a little bit on you. You've played a heel for such a long time.
Yes.
What advice would you have for anyone who is treading down that path of getting into the business and starting to develop their gimmick as a heel at first? What advice would you have for them in playing a heel?
I'm a big, especially as a heel, is find a reason why you do what you do. When I present myself in the ring, my whole philosophy has always been, what would I really do in this situation? You know, like, what do I want these people to think I would do? When it comes to Sal Renaro, the character, as a heel, I want everybody to believe he is a scumbag. I don't want people to look at me and be like, oh, you know, yeah, he does certain things, but he's an okay wrestler. Like, I want people to truly believe, man, this guy is just a dick. Like, if I see him in the street, I just want to slap him because I don't like him. And that's what, you know, and I think it's just a matter of finding your own character within yourself. Don't let people tell you what your character is until you can figure out what your character is. You know, and it took me a couple of years to figure that out too. And it's, you know, Sal Renaro and the YRR really helped me tap into that, I think more so than any other character, because I had never really been given a direction character-wise before the YRR. And then when I was given the, you're a rich boy and you're flaunting your parents' money and you're just, you know, all you want to do is party and hang out with chicks. And it made me realize I hate that guy. Like, in reality, I don't party. You know, I stay at home. I watch the Lakers. I watch the Braves. I watch the Dodgers. You know, I watch wrestling, and that's pretty much my life. And when I hear about, you know, when I flip up and my wife gets the remote and turns on the Jersey Shore or whatever crap MTV decides is music television nowadays, which is not music television because it's not music, but I digress from that point. I hate those guys. Like, I feel like, man, that guy is the biggest douchebag ever. And then that's what I try. I study those guys and try to make them my character.
This may be a tough area to ask, but being that I'm a Florida guy and I've done FIP events and I've met you at Peterson Cup events, feelings on everything that's gone on with Chasen and his legal issues. Any kind of comment? Have you talked to Chasen at all about what happened?
I talked to Chasen a little bit, see how he's doing. He said he was okay. When I got the news, I kind of just laughed it off. The first thought that crossed my mind was, This would be fantastic if Chris Hansen was there to deliver the news to him. I don't know. Because in my brain, that's how it goes down. If Chasen walks in a room and there's Chris on him. I really hate it. Like, Chasen's a really good dude. I have nothing but the fondest memories of hanging out with Chasen. And I, I personally can stand by it. I never saw him interact with an underage girl. It really sucks for him. When I've talked to him, he seemed to be in better spirits than I think I would be in his shoes. But Chris Hansen was involved somehow.
And we've got another stocks type question, but I can't ask it because Bug will hurt me physically and put me in an MMA hole. So the floor belongs to the Spud guy.
It's true. I will. Now, everybody has been on the social networking sites and they ask the stupid questions. The stock stupid question of, you can tell a lot about their person by the type of underwear that they wear. I like to change it. If Sal Rinaro were a type of underwear, what type of underwear would Sal Rinaro be?
I would probably be, I'd be brief, but I'd probably be more of a teal with a fluorescent design on it. Cause I'm lovable and I'm a really good hugger, so I'd have to be a brief. And I really like colors. Maybe a teal with a purple, fluorescent color. Is there a fluorescent purple or is it just called fluorescent purple?
I don't know.
So we'll have to research that. But I would definitely have that. I would be that part of, I'd definitely have that on me if I'm underwear. And probably a Lakers and Dodgers logo somewhere. Probably on each butt cheek, one and the other. I think would be the Sal Rinaro underwear model.
Before Spud gets into question number two, which sometimes gets us close to lawsuit, from our chat room, I dig it wanted to know thoughts on Jimmy Rave and working with him as a tag team partner, as someone involved in Rampage himself. Thoughts on Jimmy?
It's actually from Jimmy. I know it is. Jimmy Rave is my best friend. Jimmy Rave and I pretty much broke in at the same time. My third match was with Jimmy Rave. I was under a hood, and I had my long hair pulled through the mouthpiece like a mustache. Because I was going to make millions of dollars. So I've known Jimmy since 2000. Jimmy Rave shoot my best friend, and the tag team partner thing in Ring of Honor when we were the Embassy was my idea that I threw to Jimmy, that Jimmy threw to Gabe, to which Gabe said, "Jimmy, you're a genius." But I love working with Jimmy. I'm on the phone with him every place talking about whatever. We've always bounced ideas off each other when it pertains to whatever, whether it be, you know, all the stuff he's got going on or the stuff I got going on. So it was really just a natural step when Jimmy was offered the book at Rampage that I come along with him. I'd actually, like I said, I was the first match in the history of the company, and I thought to get Jimmy on after TNA let him go. So I had a funny feeling that when we switched directions and Jimmy was getting the book, I had a funny feeling it was going to go to Jimmy, and Jimmy, the first guy he threw out there was me to help him out. So I love it. Jimmy and I have very different personalities when it comes to booking philosophies. Jimmy likes to do wrestling and I like to do comedy stuff. So we often butt heads because no problem making heavyweight champion a former high school coach and a heavyweight champion at the same time. Why not have two characters? You can't have enough. And Jimmy's like, no, the tarnish is the belt. And I say, hey, I'll get something to clean that belt off with and we can move on because this is funny. So meeting in the middle is often fun to get to. But I think the world of Jimmy Rave, and I've probably worked Jimmy or teamed with Jimmy at least 14 billion times in my life, to the point where when Jimmy works on random shows here in Georgia where guys don't know him, I usually call his comeback to them before Jimmy even gets into the building because I know what he's going to do.
Now, we have, I have to run and help the wifey do the dishes real quick, so I have to ask one more question before I bolt out of here.
Yeah, but before you go, you have a lot to live up to here. You have Steve Carino, Carino in a bar in Thailand or Southeast Asia with C.W. Anderson and a Samoa Joe-like looking woman.
That's a big pressure.
So we've had a Kenny King story involving a knife and Delirious and Brian Danielson. So
it sounds like a great time.
Be warned, and remember, we're PG-13 here, so
we'll let
the spud loose on this one.
All right.
Now, what is this rib that you have ever pulled, seen pulled, or been a part of?
That's a toss up. I was a noted ribber mainly in my wild side days. It's passed on throughout my years. It's really a toss up. There's two that I'm really proud of. One, myself and my buddy Chad Parham were driving back from Tennessee to Wildside on a Saturday. And for any of you that have made that trip to Cornelia, Georgia, from anywhere but Cornelia, Georgia, you know that there's a long stretch of highway called 985 where there's literally nothing. Like, the trees are depressed. Like, as you drive by them, you can see they're suicidal trees, you know? Like, they're miserable being there. So we're going down this road. Chad and I had been up probably for 3 days straight, completely sober, but 3 days straight because we were, you know, 20 years old and getting to wrestle and half retarded. So we're going down the road. We had stopped at Taco Bell for lunch. And behind us, someone starts blaring on their horn. And it's a huge van, so it's blaring on their horn. So we start swerving in and out of the lane just to screw with them. Well, finally, they get hot and pass us. And as they pass us, we realize it's the van from San Antonio driven by Rudy Boy Gonzalez. And I believe Masada was in it, Fast Eddie, Don Juan, Chris Marvel, that cast of character. So they pass us and decide to get us back by pouring all their beverages out their windows as they're driving by so it splashes on our car.
Ew.
So we catch up to them, and I don't know why. Again, we're half retarded. My buddy Chad goes, "Hey, you got any Taco Bell left from last night?" And I go, "Yeah, there's a burrito." He goes, "Put the burrito in your butt and make it look like your butt's eating it while you moon them." And my reaction is, of course, the same reaction of every person in America. "That's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that?" So we catch up to them, and my butt's eating this burrito, and we laugh it off. Well, we get to the building, and they for us because we stopped to do whatever. Lord only knows what. And when we get there, I think, oh, this burrito is still in perfect condition. So I sign it, "I still love you, Ruby boy, heart, HBK," and leave it in the driver's seat. And I never got a reaction out of Rudy for like 3 months. And it kind of gnawed at me a little bit. Like, man, I thought this was a good payoff. He got my butt burrito. Well, I did an interview for some magazine. I don't remember where. But I did an interview for some magazine, and they asked me about some of my crazy road antics, and that story came up. And within 2 days of this story being published, Rudy Boy calls me and goes, "I had no clue what that was. It all makes sense now. You're a real dick." And I'm like, "Oh, good. I finally got my payoff."
Oh my God. Yeah, that soundbite material, if you can't find it anywhere, folks. Jocktoberfest is the event. RampagePerWrestling.net is the website. If you're a fan of the Facebook, Salinar does have a page. You'll see him probably sitting there in Atlanta Braves gear going, I could do that guy's job. Before we let you go, thoughts on the Braves season and an exit that looked like it was coming for a few years in Bobby Cox taking his well-deserved retirement?
Definitely. You just threw one right in my wheel. Actually, I've been a lifelong Dodgers fan. I was raised in California.
Right.
And you know, I grew up and bleeding Dodger blue, and whatever Tommy Lasorda said was the gospel. So to answer a previous question, I'm Lasordian, I guess would be my religion. But in the last 2 years, my wife and I just ended up going to a lot of Braves games, and it started last year where I slowly started turning, and this year, before the season started, it was it. Like, I knew at the beginning of the year, oh my God, I've jumped ships. I'm a Braves fan now. And a lot of people buried the Braves, you know. Oh, they lost 3-1 to the Giants. The way I look at it is this. We were, before the season started, they were picked to, everybody said they were going to land third in the East. You know, and they said the Phillies were going to have a better year. They said the Mets were going to have a better year. They led the division for, I'd say, at least 70% of the season. We lost our third baseman. Our second baseman moved to third base. We lost him. Our starting pitching, Kenji Kawakami, blew. We sent him to the minors. Jair Jurgens got hurt. Chris Medlin got hurt. And we still managed to get the wild card. Like, I can't think of, you know, plus our first baseman was Troy Glaus. And I swear to God, I have seen horses run backwards faster than Troy Glaus runs out of play at first. And that's not a knock on the guy. He has no knees. It happens. I'm not mad at him. I'm just stating facts. But a team that was picked to be third in their division won the wild card, lost every one of their games in the playoffs by one run. We were in every game. I'm really proud of the Braves this year, and I actually went to the last two. I went to the last regular season game in Atlanta and the last two postseason games. So I got to see Bobby Cox's last regular season game and Bobby Cox's last two postseason games, which is a real cool moment for me, just because I've always been a baseball buff, and I always liked the Braves because, you know, watching TBS as a kid, you would see, you know, it's either before or after, or sometimes as bastards would ruin WCW Saturday night, but I wasn't that angry, so it was just really cool for Bobby to get a send-off, at least in the playoffs, and I'll tell you guys, within 3 years, Tommy Hansen, write it down, Tommy Hansen's going to be the Cy Young. He's going to win Cy Young. He's from Redlands, California. He's a beast.
You heard it here first, and so on our visit him this weekend if you live in the Warner Robins, Georgia area. RampagePerWrestling.net is the way to check that event out. As we go to break here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, coming up after the break, we're not done with the Rampage, folks, because former referee turned junior heavyweight star Mike Posey will join us right after this.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, with the advent of geek culture becoming mainstream, we here at the Wild Talk Radio Network are doing our best to capitalize on this phenomenon. In that vein, I, Mace, a co-host of Otaku Talk Live, have decided to move a small section of what we would talk about on OTL to its very own podcast. That podcast being Fashion the Book. Now, what you will hear on there is myself going through select readings of this week's comic book, and I just let you know what's going on. So, every Thursday, maybe Friday, maybe Saturday, you'll be able to hear me talk about comic books. Okay, maybe boring, maybe not, who knows? The only way you're going to find out is to go over to the archives section of wildtalkradio.com and download the show and have a listen for yourself. That's Fashion the Book, somewhere near the end of the week, right here on wildtalkradio.com.
You live in the Philadelphia, Washington, Cross, New Jersey area and are in need of a licensed massage therapist? Then you need Johnny Cashmere. He specializes in a full body relaxation experience in 30, 50, and 90 minute sessions. Deep tissue and pressure point treatment are also available. His office hours are 9 to 5 p.m., Monday to Friday. To make an appointment, email backseatjk@aim.com. Johnny also offers one-on-one yoga and meditation sessions. What are you waiting for? Set up your appointment to relaxation now.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling form. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown. It's the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
This is Lucha Libre USA superstar RJ Brewer from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Online World Wrestling Radio with Alan... Alan something. I'm not sure what his last name is. Watch... whatever.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. The 800 number that still works, yes, you guys can dial it up anytime you want, 877-588-9877, option 1. If you are a Skyper, they're rocking as the way to join us here on Alice in Chains Music Night. We're going to get into the serious thinking Alice in Chains song, so it's just that one down in the hole. We're going to wrap with a really serious song that was written by Lane Staley, the late, great Lane Staley. This also has been a Rampage Pro Wrestling sponsored night, rampageprowrestling.net. This Saturday, Doctoberfest is the event. The main event is a steel cage match featuring the new Exotic Ones taking on the Usual Suspects. And as Jimmy Ray mentioned, Dr. Johnny Gayton will be getting his hands possibly on Big Big Garfield. If you're also at that event, you'll see our next guest in action. He will be taking on a gentleman known as Chip Day, and you have seen this man before, but not in the outfit he'll be wearing this Saturday night. For years, if you were a viewer of TNA Wrestling during the weekly national pay-per-view days, you saw Andrew Thomas in the referee outfit, and you still do. You saw Rudy Charles in an outfit, and I really wish Rudy was still around. But you also saw this gentleman who also worked for the WWE version of ECW. He's been a Georgia staple for years and has worked for Mike Porter in Tennessee. Mike Posey joins us on the show. Good evening and welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going really well. We've had Jimmy Rave and Sal Renaro on to talk about this event. And as I mentioned early on in the open of the show, I've met you a couple times at events and have had a friendship with Rudy Charles for years. So this is actually my first time actually with a trained referee, full-time referee. Which came first for you? Was it training for professional wrestling as a competitor, or was it training as a referee, and what led to the referee career going further early on?
Well, I mean, like, I come from, you know, Alabama, like, small town Alabama, and there's not a lot, you know, there's not, like, you know, this big place where you go, like, this big official school where you can go learn to wrestle, you know, like, anywhere in Alabama. Really. So they just kind of have to go and find, like, little shows, I mean, just little small-time shows, and just kind of work your way up and just, so anyway, I just found this little place. It was about 2 hours north of Trussville, which is near Birmingham where I live. And I just said, hey, I just wanna be part of the show, you know? And back then, I mean, I'm not a big guy now, smaller than I am now. And he said, well, you look like a referee. So, you know, we'll let you bump around a little bit. We'll let you, you know, so you know, I trained a little bit for a couple months and actually just started refereeing. And that was in August of 2000. And I trained for a few months, and then I started refereeing shows. And then I refereed for, you know, 2 years before I ever had, like, a regular wrestling match. So, yeah, I guess refereeing was first.
Now, as mentioned on this show a few times, Mace is a trained wrestler and a trained referee. So I had a snicker when you said, somebody said to you, you look like a referee, kid. take us into your initial dealings with TNA Wrestling. Was it Bill Behrens that it brought you in? Who was it? And what did you initially think when you got to the fairgrounds and they said, okay, here's what it is, dude. We're weekly pay-per-view. We're $9.95. And we're here in the fairgrounds in Tennessee. What were your initial dealings with TNA?
I mean, TNA, especially at the beginning, I mean, it's like sometimes it's kind of who you know, but I mean, and then a lot of it's just being in the right place at the right time. Like, I started in TNA in February of 2003, which was about 7 months after they started. And I'd been going to, you know, the Wild Side for year or two, for a long time before TNA started. And, you know, Bill, he was in charge. He was the guy that, you know, booked the extras or booked the guys for the dark matches, explosion matches at TNA. So, since I, you know, was already Wild Side and Bill was, you know, running Wild Side, I finally got a chance to, you know, come, you know, show up and referee a dark match and explosion match. And then I just showed up. It was like February 19th. 2003 or something like that, and I just showed up one week and started refereeing, and just said, and what happened was, the story, see, originally when TNA started, they had Rudy, and they had Andrew, and they had Scott Armstrong, and actually that day of February was the day that the Armstrongs, they got in some disagreement with Jeff and Jerry, I don't know what the story was, We don't whatever the point was, they left that day. So they were down to Rudy and Andrew. So at that point, the first 6 months I was there, all I did was exposure matches. Unless they needed like a, you know, a wrestling box or something, they throw me in there on pay per view. So I think for like the first 6 months I did like three of the pay per views. And that was just when I needed a rest bump. it's just kind of being in the right place at the right time. And it just worked out. I just showed up then and said, just start showing up every week. And back then, if you just showed up and did what you're told and, you know, be nice and say hey, everybody, and keep in line, you know, good things happen with us.
Now, just sort of a technical question. Like, just going off my own personal experience refereeing, how much control did you actually have with the guys in the ring, or was it more like you go to break them up and they tell you to piss off, or, you know, besides, like, the visual enforcing of rules, was there anything you really got involved with the guys in their matches?
I like to know what's going to happen the whole match, just so I can kind of, you know where to be and when to be there, and, you know, what's not to have any surprises. I mean, you'll get some guys, you know, they want to be jerks about it. They're like, just count three, kid. You know, just, if I get three jobs, just count the finish. But I need to know. All right, whatever. When your match is screwed up, don't come, you know what I mean? Which is what they do anyway. I mean, the referee, that's the hardest job in wrestling, the hardest job in the world. I mean, if something goes wrong in the match, they're always going to blame the referee, whether it's the referee's fault or not. I mean, that's just the way it is. And then you're pretty much stuck. And then you can't just go, you know, bury the boys in the match, because then you're just, you know, making the boys look bad. But then, I mean, you kind of have to take heat for everything. So,
yeah.
I mean, to answer your question, I like to know what's going to go on the whole time. I mean, if I have to, like, ask questions and kind of nose around while they're going over it,
I think you kind of want to know if somebody like the size of Kevin Northcutt is going to come flying into you in a corner or a abyss or somebody like that, as opposed to,
yeah,
here comes Kid Plow.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of a situation like that, have you ever actually been in something like that? It's like, we need something, all of a sudden, guess what, you're going to get killed in the corner.
Oh, yeah, I mean, stuff gets called on the fly all the time, you know? I mean, you kind of have to be on your toes and just be ready. I mean, you can't. I mean, wrestling is not reacting. It's kind of like reacting. I guess people said before. It's kind of improv. And if something needs to be changed, you just change it. And you kind of have to be ready for anything.
I have a question from the chat room before you go ahead, Spug. And this will jump ahead a couple minutes because of we're trying to do it in a bit of a timeline, but it's not working here. Gentleman in our chat room wanted to know, Mike, you refed quite possibly the shortest match in WrestleMania history between Kane and Chavo Guerrero in WrestleMania 24. Memories of it, and do you think it was actually shorter than King Kong Bundy, SD Jones back at WrestleMania 1?
Officially on the record, what I heard was the King Kong Bundy match was 5 seconds. And then I heard that the Chavo Kane match, it was either 8 seconds or 9 seconds officially on record. So I think it was longer than that one. But I mean, it didn't seem like it was very long. I mean, from the time of billing. But I mean, the time standing out there for all the entrances and stuff, I was out there for a few minutes, I can say.
What's the WrestleMania experience like before Spug asks us?
What was it like, the experience?
Yeah.
I mean, I did 23. Like, I was kind of, like I said, I did the ring crews. I was pretty much 80% of my job working there was setting up the ring and make sure everything in the ring and around it was set up right. Because if it's not, then, you know, the referees, the ring crew, that's the guy that come yell at. So sometimes I tended to get burned out a little bit. So a lot of time WrestleMania 23 came along, I mean, I did the Money in the Ladder match, I mean, it was almost just another show. And I mean, I'm kind of mad at myself for feeling that way, but I did. I remember, like, texting my wife and telling her that. But so by the time WrestleMania 24 came around, I told myself I was going to make sure I enjoyed it and had fun and not let myself get stressed out. So I just kind of made sure I didn't let, you know, ring bull crap, you know, get in the way, and just kind of take it in and enjoy the experience for what it was.
Now, with being a referee, it's not the same as being a worker in the ring as far as wrestling and getting physical, but as the referee's job, you are kind of required to keep the pace and kind of steer the match where the performers want it to go. Have you ever been in the ring and had a situation just get absolutely out of your control? Legitimately? Not
really on a big stage like TNA or WWE. Everybody there is, you know, professional. They know what they're doing. They're not gonna give them a fight or nothing. They're not gonna, like, I mean, everybody in WWE TNA has been out there. They know what they're doing from the time they walk out there to the time they leave. So I never had to worry about guys that, you know, didn't know what they were doing.
I don't necessarily mean guys that didn't know what they were doing, but I mean, there are egos. There are things that get heated. I'm just wondering if you had ever gotten into a situation anywhere where things got a little bit beyond, you know, what they should have been.
Not really, but I mean, I've seen, you know, guys, you know, they'll kind of get rough with each other, but not to the point where they take, you know, the integrity of the match away. And if they did, I mean, I'm pretty much going to stay out of it, because, one, it's not my business, and making the whatever, I'm not going to get in the middle of their, whatever's going on, whatever they're mad at, but, yeah, I probably got stay out of it.
Fair enough. Now, you've worked at WrestleMania, you've worked for TNA. Have you ever thought about traveling overseas, maybe trying to go to Japan a little bit and work for some of the Americans over there? I don't know if referees travel as wrestlers do. That's why I'm asking.
I know, like, in Japan, all the referees, a lot of the main referees in Japan are old school Japanese workers. And it's kind of different over there. They just don't let any, you know, a redneck kid like myself come in and, you know, just, they just don't throw anybody out there in Japan, is what I'm trying to say. I mean, you could, like, Marty Elias, the guy, he worked in WWE. He actually worked in Japan. He's one of the few Americans that actually got to. He did, like, a short tour. But, I mean, it'd be good. I would do it, you know, if the opportunity came about, but it's probably even harder for to be an American to go referee. It's hard enough to be an American wrestler trying to get work in Japan, but it's even 10 times harder to be an American referee to go to Japan than referee.
Fair enough.
Now, I'm just wondering again, pulling on my own experience as a referee. Last time I was actually reffing, I did a double header, and by the end of it, my wrist felt like it was going to pop my hand off at the end of the thing. Is there any sort of methods or any tips you want to give to any aspiring referees in the business or wanting to come into the business as a referee?
You mean to where you don't hurt your hand? use your forearm. I don't know. Yeah, I know what you mean. I used to get, like, calluses on my, I get calluses on my hand. You know, it takes me training. I can do stuff. But I'd have to just kind of face yourself and, you know.
Because I've seen indie shows. A referee in Florida here named Billy Dalton used to do some TNA events in Orlando, and would wear wrist tape like a wrestler would. And TNA actually said to him, no, you can't do that here, Billy. And he was just like, well, I may break my freaking arm on your ring. I mean, Talk about the difference. Because did you get to referee in the six-sided ring in Nashville?
Oh, yeah. That was there when I first was in.
Yeah, different for that. Was it different mat as opposed to the regular four-sided ring for you, or did it feel the same, or did you ever get lost as a referee in a six-sided match?
The ring was different, yeah, especially at the beginning, trying to get used to, you know, what corner to stand in, what corner to... So, you know, you got, like, two more corners than you two. And then you got to make sure, because guys, they can go, you know, six different ways. As opposed to, you know, four, you got to make find more places to get out of the way. I mean, you know, at first, it was really, it was a big adjustment. But after a while, you got kind of used to it. As far as the ring being made, it was made the same as other stuff, yeah.
Since you, as mentioned before, you have wrestled, refereed for both major companies, be it TNA Wrestling or World Wrestling Entertainment, talk about for us the job of being an official for either company. Who's actually in charge of the referees for WWE, and compare it if possible to if there was someone that actually was in charge of refereeing for TNA?
WWE is really not an official, you know, head referee, senior official. Everybody's just kind of, I mean, they don't even have, like, on WWE, they don't even say the referee's names anymore, if you notice. They're just the officials. I mean, technically, you know, Johnny Hayes, he's the guy in charge, and he's the one that signs all the matches. And, so, yeah, it's pretty much Johnny's the guy that's in charge of signing matches and stuff. I mean, the guys, you know, Kyoto, Jack, and Chad, the ones that have been there forever, I mean, for sure, they're going to have a little bit more. I mean, they're going to have a little bit more say and, especially on the house show match, on who does what. As the guys that have only been there a few years. So, like, in TNA, I mean, I guess Earl's kind of the, you know, main guy. He's been there and done that, so he's kind of in charge of everything at TNA.
Now, I just have a quick question for you. And depending on your answer, a follow-up. Roll Tide or War Eagle?
Uh-oh.
Oh man, well, my wife, she went to Alabama, so I guess I have to be, Roll Tide. I mean, it really doesn't matter to me. I mean, people, they don't understand. Like, maybe if you're from Australia too, but like, if you live in Alabama, you have to pick. I mean, you have to pick Alabama or you have to pick Auburn. You can't just not care. It's like the biggest thing in the South.
Sounds like me here in Florida, where I gotta be. When I moved here in '96, everybody was like, "Okay, you're either a Seminoles fan, a Gator fan, or a Miami Hurricane fan." And I said, "I'm none. I think college football's stupid because it's pro players not getting paid pro money, man. You want me to pick one of these three schools?"
See, I'm from Ohio, so if you don't root for the Scarlet and Gray, you miss nothing.
Yeah, in the South, I mean, college football is bigger than the NFL down here, so.
You don't have a whole lot of protein, so. But see,
right, sure.
See, I was going to ask, because I guess it doesn't really matter to you. I was going to ask, what hurts more, the fact that Alabama lost to South Carolina or the fact that Auburn's rated number one?
I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but I've noticed, like, because these people play seriously down here, I go along, like, it's crazy. Like, the Alabama fans, like, the Auburn fans, actually, the Alabama fans, I've noticed, they're trying not to be mad, so they're kind of jumping ship and turning babyface. So they're kind of babyfacing all the Auburn fans, if you know what I mean? And, so, that way, they don't come off, you know, looking bad. And so that way they don't have as much heat with the Auburn fans. So they kind of babyface and say, oh, yeah, Auburn's doing great. It'll be great. You know, this is going to be a good game when Auburn plays Alabama, you know, a couple weeks. They're not, like, turning heel on them, you know what I mean? But say Auburn, I don't know who they're playing this week. But so if you say Auburn, they're going to play, you may know who they're playing this week. Are they off?
Are playing, they just played LSU. Oh, God, who is Auburn playing? They're not playing anybody in particularly important. I
Oh, and see, that makes it even better. So say Auburn, they lose to whoever this little, you know, Jabroni school they're playing this week. The Alabama fans, they're going to turn on Auburn just like that. They'll be burying them left and right.
Auburn plays Mississippi 6 o'clock on ESPN2 this weekend.
Okay, so say Mississippi just slaughters Auburn, or it's close. Either way, if Auburn loses, Alabama fans, they're going to jump that ship and turn heel on Auburn and, you know, just bury them and cut promos, you know, just because they're Auburn. That's the way it is.
And this is in Boise State, won 49-20 over Louisiana Tech.
Go Boise! Crash the BCS party, baby!
Never gonna happen.
It will. It will happen this year.
Mike Posey joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. I'm Alan Wojcik with the Spud Guy and Mace from Wrestle Talk Radio, and they also have a show on this network Wednesday night, Tutaku Talk Live. The event is Doctoberfest, brought to you by Rampage Pro Wrestling and Johnny G's Fun Center in Warner Robins, Georgia. Mike will be there in competition against Chip Day. At what point during your career did refereeing turn into wrestling in rinks? I mean, at one point you did a short stint with David Young in TNA where you were just like, I say I'm done, and the shirt came off, and I'm sitting there going, holy crap, he's attacking David Young.
Yeah, that was more the referee wrestling. The day that I started, you know, wrestling more was actually the day after I got released from WWE. I mean, I got the call on Thursday night. I was wrestling Friday night. It'll be 2 years in January. But I've always, you know, I used to wear a mask some places, like indie shows, before I was a TNA, and even while during TNA, I just kind of dabble in it and always, you know, work out and practice and train stuff. And Deep South was a big help, too, because I did a lot there. I learned a lot there, too.
Now we're trying to transition the wrestling career, but I've got a couple of last referee questions for you. Number one is there actually a referee rule book, or is it more a thing of, can you count to three, can you count to 10? Okay, you can, that's good enough, get in the ring.
It depends on where you go. I mean,
is there set guidelines as to this is a situation where you count this, this is where you try to break up that? Is there a set rule list to follow, or is it just do to the best of your abilities?
I mean, there's no rule. Somebody needs to write a rule book. They make $1 million. I've said that for years. I should do one. I'm just hanging off. I'm about to do it. But yeah, I mean, as far as getting spiked, anybody's trying to get started, I mean, it's just to just be a fan and just know what you know. And I mean, people, I've said, you know, anybody can do it, but then anybody can't do it. It's been a big argument, you know, that anybody can referee, but then again, not everybody can referee. It's just test you, but being at the right place at the right time. But at the same time, the ones that last are the ones that actually kind of know what they're doing. But I guess I might not know what I'm doing. I've had a job now, so.
All right. I might have to start looking into writing a referee rule book then, make myself some good money. The other question that I've got for you sort of pertains to your wrestling career. As a wrestler who has come up from being a referee, do you have sort of more sympathy and a bit more willingness to work with the referee in the ring than most of the guys would? You know, you've been on both sides of the curtain. You know, does that sort of play into your wrestling as you do it now?
Yeah, I think I do. Whoever referee my matches, I always try and, if there's anything they need to know, I mean, I try and make a point to tell them and not let there be any surprises. Because, yeah, I've been there when guys, they don't want to tell you what's going on. They just, you know, just count to three, kid. Just count to finish. Just stay out of the way and do your dive and all that bullcrap. I never wanted to be that guy, so I just try and, if whoever's refereeing the match I'm wrestling in, I try and let them know, you know, whatever they need to know and whatever they want to know if they ask, you know.
Right on.
I've been wanting to ask this question for a while because I've been a fan of TNA Wrestling, and I always made fun of Rudy Charles when he would work. Anytime I knew Rudy was in a main event at a pay-per-view, I was like, oh, God, here comes Rudy. Oh, boom, oh, God, Rudy just took the bump. Good Lord. Has there ever been a situation at the events between you and Andrew Thomas and him and then Earl for the while of sitting there putting money down going, who has the best ref bump of the TNA roster? I mean, are you guys sitting there at some point going, I'm going to do the Greg Valentine, or I'm going to do a Ric Flair looking one, or I'm going to look like Brian Hebner did a few weeks ago where it looked like he got run over by a semi. I mean, is there that kind of thing going on, or am I just making a good laugh out of all
I mean, it really depends. Like, depends on who the guy is that you're taking bumps on. Is really, but yeah, I mean, Earl, he's not gonna. I mean, he can still bump if he wanted to, but I don't know. I mean, I'd do whatever they want to do. I mean, I'm trying to see. It really, like I said, depends on, you know, who you're taking a bump from or what kind of bump it is, really.
Now, is there ever a situation in the ring, a spot or a bump where you would just, you know, look at the guys you're working with and go, no way, hell no, I'm not doing that?
Anything with Abyss lately?
It probably wouldn't be politically correct to just come out and say it like that. But if it, something did come up you didn't feel comfortable with, you'd probably kind of, in the right way, ask another fellow referee if they minded doing it, maybe, but that probably wouldn't happen. I think everybody, whoever's doing the match, would pretty much just take whatever bump it is, because really there's nothing out there that's not going to, nobody's really going to not want to take. Nothing, there's nothing really, I would think, you know, it's that bad, it would kill you.
Got an email at radio@allnightworldofwrestling.com from Mike Liguori, Tampa, Florida, wanted to know, being a referee and a fan of wrestling, Mike Posey, if you could pick any match, and I know this is crazy to ask this, but we don't refuse questions here, that you could past or present, sit there and go, I want to be the referee for that match. What one would, or two or three, stand out in your mind that you haven't been a part of that you would have been like, crap, that guy got to referee that. I could have done a better job, or I just wanted to be there to watch that match.
I never got to referee a Shawn Michaels match. That's one thing I didn't get to do. And, I mean, anytime you're in, like, a main event of a big pay-per-view, that's always, that'd be, I mean, that's something that I'd like, you know, always want to do. Yeah, anything like that, you know. You know, Hulk Hogan, I was a big Hulk Hogan fan. I got to do his one match, one of the last tag matches he did. That was pretty cool. If I ever got to do more, that'd be something I'd want to do.
Now, you've, like I said, you've wrestled, or you've reffed at WrestleMania and for TNA and WWE. What eventually would your goal be as far as your wrestling career? I mean, would you like to main event Mania? I mean, that seems to be every wrestler's goal, but is there something in your career that you want to do that nobody else has done?
I mean, I wouldn't mind to be the first person to say they refereed on WrestleMania and wrestled in a title match in WrestleMania. Any title match.
Hmm.
I know that means.
We heard an interesting answer from Sour Nara to a question that Spug asked. So since you've worked for both promotions, I'm going to let Spug ask this one about locker room ethics.
Locker room ethics? Refresh me. I'm sorry. I'm balancing the checkbook.
He hates when I ask the question because I botch it all the time. Being that you've been in the TNA locker room, the WWE locker room, been on the road, boys will be boys, what's the most ridiculous, outrageous rib that you've either seen, been had played on you, or partaken in any way, shape, or form. And remember, we are PG-13, not R-rated. And it's just you, the three of us, and a couple hundred thousand people listening, so nobody will know.
Right. I'm not really a big river, so, because I don't want done to me. I wouldn't beat somebody else, but I wouldn't want done to me, so. I don't know. I always try to stay out of that stuff, because it was part of it. I tried to look the other way. Well, what did Sal say? What's his answer?
Sal mentioned the Rudy Boy Gonzalez road trip with a burrito and partial nudity.
Oh, I haven't heard that one, but it sounds interesting.
Okay, well, was there anyone in the WWE locker room that was a big river that you can mention that, you know, that was like, you know, you, so when you came into the company, you were told you better watch your back because so-and-so will do this to your gear?
I mean, by the time I got there, you know, most of those days, like, even now, I think those days are kind of, like, crazy. Weird. I mean, like, the referees, like, we'd be, you know, tightening the ropes, you know, right before the show, and then, like, you know, Jack or Kev, that's how I pull your shorts down. They're sitting there in your underwear, you know, in front of the 20 people that might already walk in, or just whoever's stay cans around, you know, something like that, or, what else happened? Just stupid stuff like that.
All right. This weekend is mentioned. Go ahead, ask your question. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to plug the event, but you were already doing that, so.
Okay, this event, Sal had mentioned he was a part of the first ever Rampage for Wrestling event. What led you there? Was it Bill Barron, Jimmy Rave, living in, you know, hearing about it? What? Tell us what's so different from being at the big shows like a WWE pay-per-view, TNA pay-per-view in Orlando. What makes an event like Rampage for Wrestling worth coming to check out?
I mean, for me, I like being there. I mean, it's really well run professionally. I mean, there's a real tight ship. I mean, it's not much differently run than anything that the big companies do. There's not much difference in what you, the way it's run, the way it's produced, the whole show. I mean, the quality matches, they're the same, you know? I mean, you're going to see just as good a show with TNA if you would just come see Rampage.
Got a email question that actually just showed up a couple minutes ago from Tamela Jones of Nashville, Tennessee. Mike, I saw you work for Mike Porter's NWA Main Event promotion. Talk about what seems to be a clustering of talent spread out all over Nashville. I think what she's kind of asking is, what's it like to wrestle in a Nashville area that seems to be like six or eight different indie companies all trying to outdo each other? What's the national atmosphere like, especially going on with 6 years that TNA wrestling has gone in? It almost seems like that city is still trying to recover wrestling-wise.
Yeah, there's like three or four little promotions up there. They run against each other. They run the same night. Like, I mean, I can think of three or four places off the top of my head that both run Friday and Saturday nights within 30 minutes to an hour of each other. And then, you know, you got the whole thing, you can't work for this guy, this guy can't work for you, you can't work for him, or you can't come work here, but I'll pay you more money. And then they jump back and forth. I mean, I always said, that will happen, just if they all work together and have one or two, at least maybe one show with all the talent, it'd be a better show, but, I mean, I know that'll never happen. So, I mean, the talent, there's still a lot of talent out there. It's good. It's just as the show. I mean, it's just it's almost too many shows. But sometimes you have to have a lot of shows so you can find places to work.
Oh yeah, so I know. And I know what you mean, because you have SAW and USWO running. One's running Millersville, one's running Stadium Inn almost the same night.
Yeah.
And it's like when I was there in 2007 for Slammiversary, I had friends like Hammerjack and Cassidy Ryland, all these people, the LA player, were like, oh, you got to come and check us out. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go to the Stadium Inn because I'm friends with Tony Fox people. And
yeah,
then
yeah,
I saw his crowd on Saturday night. I was like, holy cow.
Right. And then, but then at the same time, you got Burt running Friday or Saturday night, you know, within an hour away. And then the NBA Top Rope, they run, you know, every Saturday night, you know, another in the other direction, 30, 40 minutes in the other direction.
And
but there's always shows time, yeah. Somewhere they go to wrestle.
We're going to go ahead and say thanks to Mike Posey. RampageForWrestling.net is the way to find the event. Doctoberfest this Saturday in Warner Robins, Georgia. Thanks so much for stopping by and giving us your time, sir.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it.
All righty. This is the point where we usually thank everyone for listening in and checking us out. And I'm not the only one who has a really cool headset and a studio and gets to do stuff on this network. So I get to pimp the wild. Tim Stein has a great commercial out there about standing up for the company. And I will stand up for WTR. It is an awesome network that if you're sitting there going, no, I could do a show. I think I'd like to do a show. admin@wildtalkradio.com can get you there. Wednesday nights on this very network, these two gentlemen, Mason Spug, get joined by the end-all, be-all of the WTR network. And that would be the Omega to have Otaku Talk Alive. Any ideas for the fans? Give them a preview, possibly, of what you got cooking tomorrow. Anything you want to throw out there?
No show.
No,
yeah,
what?
We're actually on hiatus till November 10th.
Wait,
a bit of a relax and recharge for the hosts at this point in time.
I'll figure that. Thanks for sending me the memo, bosses. Oh, I got total doofus, but I have that when I wake up in the morning. Okay, Rock, before I go any further, does she have a show Thursday night?
No show this Thursday night, but check out CindySin.com and Facebook.com/CindySin. We want your Halloween costumes.
Good God, is anybody work on this frickin' network anymore? Friday night is, I believe, Running the Ropes with
yes.
Mav and Nick.
Yes, there will supposedly be a live edition of Running the Ropes this Friday night with Maverick and Nick.
Alright, now what do you and the Subway and the Godfather have planned? Are you guys doing the show Saturday before, after the Country Fest, or are you guys enjoying Devil's Night?
First off, the TD Top 20 Country Countdown returns, 9 p.m. Eastern, hosted by the Train Dog.
Thank
then,
you, I couldn't remember the technical name.
That's why I got it covered, because I pimp all the shows. Then we will be back midnight-ish, or as close as we can get, for CB Radio, Spooktober, the final day. We'll continue our celebration of Halloween. Join us.
Alright, yep. And no pay-per-view this Sunday, so the Wrestle Talk Radio folks are back at 10 o'clock. And that is Tim Stein, that is the Omega, that is the Spug, that is the Mace. Will, maybe not. With OTL on the break, don't forget, Mace not only does that show, helps us out on this show, helps out on Sundays, but he's a podcast maven. Give fans an idea of what Bashing the Books is all about, sir.
Pretty much, I take select readings out of my weekly comic book list out of this week's new releases. And I sit there, I don't read line for line, but I just give you an outline of what the books are and history on the title and what this week's story is about. If you like it, then you go out and buy it. If you don't like it, well, at least I've saved you, you know, $3-4. All it is just me reviewing comic books for an hour and a half. And sometimes, if there's a comic book-based movie out, I'll give it a thumbs up, thumbs down, or, you know, unzip the fly and piss on it completely.
Ooh.
The only way you find out is you go to the archive section of wildtalkradio.com and download the latest episode of Bashing the Books.
And on that note, we thank, yes, the hockey show that I did with Tim Stein will be back in a couple weeks. we're not recharging batteries or anything. I think it's just trying to look at the calendar and go, so you want to do it Monday night? Do you want to do it Wednesday or Thursday? I don't know. Do you want to just like randomly sit in a hockey arena and go, cool, all right. Thanks to the big bosses, as always, Tim Stein, Sir Rockin, Jason Dedrich, Brad Dykens, the Spug Guy and Mace. They say I'm kissing, but I'm not. They are awesome. Check out their show tomorrow night. Check out their show Sunday night. They're handcuffed a little bit here because of the parameters that were potty mouth free, and I appreciate them for doing it. Thanks to Jimmy Raves, Sal Renaro, Mike Posey, the listeners of the chat room, and Allison Chains for providing the music. And this song is also one of my favorites because it's written by Lane Staley after a family member involved, I believe it was Vietnam, that is. Brother was involved with and came up with the song known as Rooster. Thank you for joining us. Have a good evening.